Thank you. is that we've been waiting for the DM to come. We're happy the DM is here. Yeah, honorable members, the department, the DM, the CFO, and the acting DG, our visitors, our guests who are welcoming this meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Rural Development and Land Reform. We are aware that our role as Parliament is to oversight and also to ensure public participation, and also to pass the budget of the departments, which we are oversighting. The PFMA and the Treasury regulations require the department to present its strategic plan at the beginning of the term, and at the beginning of each and every financial year, the annual performance plan must be tabled before the committee for consideration before the budget vote of the department. So here we'll be dealing with the APP of the department, as well aware that yesterday we're dealing with the APP of the entities, that is the commission and the ITB. Without the waste of time, Pumla, can you just indicate to us the apologies that we have received?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members. Good morning, colleagues. I've got an apology from the M. Apologies from MP Songo, MP Kigani, MP Traveling, and MP Matias. Thank you, Chair.
Those are the apologies. Those reasons were not cited, but can you note these apologies and proceed? DM, as I've highlighted, that today you will be dealing with the APP of the department. I don't know whether do you want to break the ice before the acting DG make her presentation.
Thank you, the chairperson. Good morning to the leadership gathered here. We have once again come to the Portfolio Committee to speak into our APP 2016-2017. Our acting DG is ready to make a presentation. Of course, we regard this forum always as a very important forum where we must be able to present ourselves so that an effective oversight role can be played, so that we can also take criticisms and issues raised by your good selves here, so that we can be able to advance the cause of our people in the country. We will be speaking into the vision, mission, strategic priorities, and after the presentation, of course, as normal, Chair, we will be taking some questions. I am really coming here to give full support to our team. The acting DG says he's itching to be presenting. He's not nervous at all. And so at a particular stage, Chair, I will be slipping out. But without further ado, I would want to invite the acting DG to start with the presentation.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to hand over to DDG Southgate, who will take us through the presentation, but I first just need to apologize because the presentation sent through is the annual performance plan, and that is correct. You do have it in front of you. But it seems that when it came through the second part, which dealt with the finances, showing the budget did not come through, and we do apologize for that. We only discovered that last night because we had signed off on the correct two documents. So we do apologize, but it has been circulated. But the budget talks to the targets as in the APP already circulated. I'm going to hand over then to DDG Southgate. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honourable Members. The APP presentation has been circulated. I've got, and I thought I'd introduce a colleague on the left-hand side of me, is my new Director of Strategic Planning in the Department, who is the one who basically pulls the APP for the Department together. And I thought it would be a good opportunity for you to meet him and for him just to take us through the presentation, and then we can deal with questions thereafter. His name is Liabua Sipulwane, has been working in the department for about a couple of years, but has recently been appointed as the Director of Strategic Planning. Liabua, over to you.
Thanks, DDG. And Chairperson, I will start first by looking at the presentation outline and also the vision, mission, and the strategic objectives of the department, and the key priorities that we are going to focus on in the coming 2016-17 financial year. And really talking about how much in terms of targets now are we intending to do given the budget that we have for the financial year. Okay, quickly through the presentation outline, we'll look at the vision, mission, and the values of the department, and talk to the MTSF 2014-2019 priorities, showcasing the link between what is in the NDP and what we have in our strategic plan and in our APP, flowing down to operational plans. Then we will also talk about the rural economy transformation model, which is one of the critical tools that we implement in the department to ensure that we transform the rural economy out there. And in our APP, there's a situational analysis which looks at the external environment and the internal environment that we find ourselves in. And sometimes it's called the horizon scan, sometimes it's called the environmental scan, but...
Sorry, Chair.
Okay.
The document presented, is this the one for which an apology was extended that we may not be having? Because
no,
I've got a different document here.
The financial one and also this performance one.
This is all I've got, and I think I'm not the only one.
Wushe will assist you.
Well, thank you very much.
Check which one you have. Thank you very much for assisting, Honourable Member. You can continue.
Okay, thanks, sir. Chairperson, we'll also talk about the legislative program, the pieces of legislation that we want to take through for approvals this year, and also the policy initiatives that the department is going to embark on for the upcoming financial year. Yes, indeed, there are policies that were approved that are in various stages of approval in terms of implementation as well. And there are also those policies that were initiated by the department that are in various stages like consultation. And then from there, Chair, we'll go to the program and sub-program plans where we'll look at strategic objectives, indicators, and targets. The vision, Chair, remains vibrant, equitable, and sustainable rural communities. And our mission is to initiate, facilitate, coordinate, catalyze, and implement an integrated rural development program. In terms of values, we want or we will uphold the following values and encourage diversity and will not discriminate anyone. And as a responsible government department, we shall strive to be transparent, accountable, and responsive. We shall also ensure that we have a dedicated, loyal, results-oriented, and professional, people-focused workforce. And in collaboration with all our stakeholders, the department will comply with all laws of this country. Chairperson, we've got six priorities flowing from the NDP that were crafted and made to be our focus areas in our medium-term strategic framework. The first one is improved land administration and spatial planning for integrated development in rural areas. And here the bias, Chairperson, will be towards the rural areas because land administration, it is happening, but we will be biased towards rural areas in terms of ensuring that the title deeds, surveying, and all those things are happening for the rural people, and they also do get security of title on the land that they occupy. And then sustainable land reform, which talks about agrarian transformation and agrarian reform in terms of a change of ownership on land. And then the third priority area is improved food security. The fourth one is smallholder farmer development and support. We're going to provide technical, financial, and infrastructure support in order to realize the agrarian transformation that we're talking about. We will also want to increase access to basic or quality basic infrastructure and services, particularly in education, healthcare, and public transport in rural areas. The last one, Chairperson, is about the growth of sustainable rural enterprises and industries characterized by strong rural-urban linkages, increased investment in agro-processing, trade development, and access to markets and financial services, resulting in job creation. In terms of the rural economic transformation model, which we see as a vehicle that will assist us in transforming the rural economy, we are saying that the rural development and agrarian transformation space is very complex and is characterized by multiple causation and feedback loops. Therefore, rural development developed that rural economic transformation model, which will be implemented through the agrarian transformation system. It is presented in four developmental deliverables, which sometimes are seen as phases or steps in this process. The first one is meeting the basic human needs. The second one is rural enterprise development. The third one is agro-village industries, whereby we'll see which will be sustained by credit facilities and value chain markets. And this will make us realize the improved land tenure systems embedded in basic human needs. So these above mentioned phases, they are also outlined in the comprehensive rural development programs, which also assist to inform the goals of the department. There are four critical phases in the rural economic transformation model, but what is of importance to note is that the inputs in terms of land will make us realize the tenure system reform, will also assist us in achieving the restitution targets that we've set ourselves, and also ensure that the community that we serve have got access to social infrastructure, IT infrastructure, and all those amenities that most of Evans people have access to. And then we'll talk about also the rural economic transformation also talks about the economic infrastructure when it comes to livestock in terms of processing plants, small industries, abattoirs, small handling facilities, feedlots, mechanizing stock water dams, deep tanks, silos, windmills, fencing, and other stuff. So it is outlining quite a number of infrastructure projects that the department should embark on in order for us to realize this rural economic transformation. And it incorporates the principles outlined in this comprehensive rural development program. When we developed our situational analysis chair, we looked at the Freedom Charter, what were the objectives in terms of the Freedom Charter, what is contained in the National Development Plan. And when we looked at the National Development Plan, there was quite a number of problem statements, which we then turned around to make them our priority areas so that they can be fully addressed by the plans, including the strategic plans and the APP of the department. We also noted the fact that there's conflicting patterns of land ownership in the country and control thereof. The impact that the drought had, specifically towards our rural communities in the past financial year, and the impact thereof going forward in terms of what is it that we need to have in place in order to address the challenges that were brought about this drought. And then we want also to ensure that there's access to and productivity of land. We want to improve food security. We also looked at the triple challenges that are facing the rural people, like unemployment, poverty, and inequality. And we identified agriculture as a driver of rural economic transformation model, as I said earlier on. And we also want to ensure that the policy on strengthening relative rights is implemented in the upcoming financial year. And we want to ensure that our stakeholders participate in all departmental programs. The priorities for the upcoming financial year, based on what we've gathered in our situational analysis, are that we want to implement the one household, one hectare to eradicate poverty and create a class of black farmers. We want to establish, even though there's established, we want to fully establish the district agri-park to provide smallholder farmers and producers with access to market, trade facilities, and other strategic logistical support. We will embark on the revitalization of the agricultural and agro-processing value chain to increase participation of these smallholder farmers in the agriculture. We want to accelerate the pace of land reform and to protect the vulnerable communities, including those farm laborers and people working on farms. We will realign the organizational structure to ensure that these priorities are achieved effectively and efficiently. The key performance areas that will receive attention for this year will be the rollout of the agri-parks across the 44 district municipalities in order to ensure that there is food production and also the construction of the new infrastructure in accordance with the seeds. We will want to speed up the labor tenant applications, especially where we have serious backlogs in Mpumalanga and KwaZulu-Natal provinces. We want to acquire and allocate land to smallholder farmers, including that program of one household, one hectare. This will ensure that at least every household in the rural community has got access to land. The scaling up of the implementation of that program on strengthening of relative rights for people working the land. The legislation program, Chairperson, has got quite a number of bills that are on various stages. The communal land tenure bill has been submitted to the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor for a pre-certification opinion. The regulation of agricultural land holdings bill was also submitted to the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor for a pre-certification opinion. The Communal Property Associations Amendment Bill will serve before the Cabinet Committee during this month, Chairperson. The Deed Registry's First Amendment Bill will be submitted to the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor for a pre-certification opinion. The Deed Registry's Second Amendment Bill was published for public comment on the 9th of March, and we are awaiting the 30-day period to expire so that it can be taken to the next phase. The Sectional Titles First Amendment Bill was submitted to the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor for a pre-certification opinion. The same applies to the Sectional Titles Second Amendment Bill. The Planning Professions Amendment Bill of 2016 is in the process of being drafted together with the Land Survey Amendment Bill. The policy initiatives that were undertaken by the department, the policy framework for the strengthening of relative rights for persons working the land, and the policy of exceptions to pre-1913 claims and on access to heritage sites and historical landmarks. And the following policies have been developed and have culminated into draft bills that I've just spoken about earlier on. It's communal land tenure policy, communal property associations policy, regulations of land holdings policy, and the electronic deed registration policy, which are at various stages, as I said, under the legislative program. And then in terms of the 2016-17 APP, the first strategic objective of ensuring 100% compliance with government regulation and legal prescription by 2020, we want to ensure that we pay the valid invoices within 30 days, 100% of those, so that to ensure that those small, medium enterprises get, you know, their monies on time so that they can thrive at the end of the day. We want to obtain a clean audit opinion on financial and non-financial performance, and we are targeting an unqualified audit opinion again for this financial year. In terms of program two, which is geospatial and cadastral services, the strategic objective statement there says facilitation of integrated spatial planning and land use management in all provinces through the application of relevant legislation. The indicator talks about the district rural development plans that we want to have completed by the end of this financial year. Chairperson, we've got 44 districts, and the target as we add them, they give you 43. So one district municipality was piloted around 2014-15. So it adds up to the 43 to make it 44. So it's been done already. Integrated and comprehensive land administration system. As a strategic objective, we want to register at least close to 1 million title deeds for the upcoming financial year. And the percentage of deeds made available within 7 days from lodgement for execution, we are allowed that space. We targeted to have 100%, but we were advised that you need to get that 5% allowance if things go wrong, because not everything is within this control. You know, sometimes the title deed there can be mistakes, and it will be referred back for a modification. So that 7 days period will be affected. So we were advised that we must rather stick to the 95%. Number of maps of the national map series produced, we are targeting 199. Number of waiting days taken to process registrable diagrams, sectional plans, and general plans, we are saying this should be done within 14 days, because, Jefferson, you cannot register any, or you cannot have even a title deed if the land was not registered. So we are saying we will be biased towards other departments, government departments like human settlement, and prioritizing your RDP houses to ensure that people get access to the title deeds and security of tenure. Then in terms of program 3, we want to facilitate infrastructure development to support rural economic transformation. And the target there, or the indicator, talks about number of infrastructure projects implemented. Here we include your animal and plant management program, your socio-economic projects, and the river valley catalytic projects. We are targeting to do 252 for the upcoming financial year. Number of agri-parks infrastructure projects implemented, we are targeting 47 for the upcoming financial year. It is being implemented and already is bearing fruits. The facilitation of the development of rural enterprises and industries in areas with economic development potential and opportunities. We want to have in all priority districts, the argument was that, Chairperson, that you see which enterprises you will have your agricultural and non-agricultural enterprises. The thinking initially was that everything that is happening in the rural space is about agriculture only. But you said, let's change our approach and ensure that we even cater for those non-agricultural enterprises. As you can see, in terms of the target for the non-agricultural enterprises, because even though the department was doing work around that, but the target was conservative in terms of 50 compared to the 115 that we have for the agricultural enterprises. We will continue to provide skills and jobs to the rural people, and for the upcoming financial year, we want to provide 10,000 skills development opportunities in rural development initiatives. Also, the NARISEC program, we want to at least recruit 2,700 NARISEC youth for the upcoming financial year. From this chapter, we want to create at least 6,020 jobs for the upcoming financial year. Then in terms of land claims, Chairperson, I must say upfront that we've received quite a number of claims. They are in various stages in terms of research, validation, and validating and all that. But for the backlog ones, we want to settle at least 615 in the upcoming financial year. And the phase project approved, we will have 76 based on what we are having on the documents right now. The number of land claims lost by 1998 to be recessed, we want to do 1,508. And then when it comes to land reform, the strategic objective statement there talks about the promotion of equitable land redistribution and agricultural development by acquiring strategically located land. We want to acquire at least 83,074 hectares of land in the 2016-17 financial year. Initially, we had high targets, but after scrutinizing and looking at the land that was allocated to beneficiaries, we realize that most of our land is lying fallow. So the focus has shifted to provide support in terms of the recapitalization and development of those farms instead of acquisitions only. Number of hectares allocated to smallholder farmers, we are saying, and in terms of the MTSF, whatever that we acquire, at least 50% should go to smallholder farmers. So in terms of this, because we've targeted 83,074 41,000 or half of that will go to smallholder farmers, even more. A number of hectares allocated to farm dwellers and labor tenants. We will ensure that at least 10% of what we would have acquired is used to address issues of evictions and all that. A number of plus farms identified for the incubation and training of agricultural graduates and the NARISEC participants. We want to have at least 9 farms out of those that will focus solely on incubation or training of these agricultural graduates. A number of pilot farms on policy on strengthening relative rights. We still continue with piloting, and for this upcoming financial year, we will do 18 of those farms. In terms of the farmer support that will provide to smallholder farmers and land reform beneficiaries for agrarian transformation, we will place 351 farms under the Recap and Development Program for the upcoming financial year, and we will train 1,755 farmers, and we will provide jobs to those 1,755 farmers. And the number of communal property associations supported to be compliant with legislation, we are targeting 207 for the upcoming financial year. Labor tenant applications settled, we are having 145. And it will also be addressed by the number of hectares of land that will be acquired to deal with labor tenant issues. Number of state land parcels confirmed as vested. We will invest 773 for the upcoming financial year, and we will always ensure that our movable asset register is 100% complete, because each and every year we are caught wanting by the AG in terms of this to say we don't know where our land is. So hence we prioritize this movable asset register so that we ensure that whatever is registered in our name, it is known and is taken care of. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I think this is one to add.
No, I was just saying, shall we take that second part of the finance before we...
CFO, over to you.
Sorry, it's me. I heard what the suggestion is from the department about taking the second part. I'm a little bit concerned about the fact that our deputy minister has indicated that he would want to leave early, and I don't know if he will still be around when we want to raise issues on this first part.
We will raise the issues whether the DM is here or not, because the acting DG is the one who's the accounting officer, but it was going to be good if the DM will also be there in here for himself, because you have to align what they've said with the finances. I don't think the finances will take long. You're welcome, Honorable Matthias. Your apology has already been tabled, but it's good to be here.
So I think I must apologize because you would have already tendered my apology. And that places you in a very, very awkward situation to see that it's a person or a member who's been announced to have tendered his apology. That's fish. So I want to apologize for placing the appearance. I'm here.
CFO.
Good morning, Chairperson and members. I'll be doing the financial part of the presentation today. Just as part of introduction, we're saying we are about the land and the people as the department. And just finance part, we're saying we are governed by integrity, service excellence, and partnership both with our client, which is the different programs within the department, and our people that we are serving. The budget is broken into three. We've got the national, driven by the MTSF, and the provincial part, which is the PGDS, standing for the Provincial Growth Development Strategy, and then we've got the district part, which is the integrated development plan. And all of them, you will see that we have resource allocations both at national, provincial, and district level, driven by the need to implement the departmental strategic and sector plans on all of them. We, in terms of finance and the strategic goals, we've got all those programs and what they do. So the allocation of the ENE budget is based on the APP that was just presented before, aligned to the department's programs and what they do, which is the administration, the geospatial and cadastral services, rural development, restitution and land reform. And on the right is what they do, like administration is our corporate governance and service excellence. And land, improved land administration is through the SPLAM and NGMS. And then rural development promote the equitable access to land to and sustainable use of land for development and sustainable rural enterprise development and industries. Promote sustainable rural livelihoods. This is directly when we go to the budget, you will see that when we go to rural development, we will have those programs coming through, and that's how we have allocated the budget. The ENE allocation for the MTEF, we've got administration, 1.4 billion in this financial year and 1.5 billion in the next year, and 2018-19 is 1.6, so you will see that it's growing steadily. NGMS, on the contrary, is going back, mostly because the allocation for ICADASTRA used to lie on this line. Now that the ICADASTRA is no longer going on, but the modernization coming in, being funded by these, you see the budget going down on that line. Rural development, you can see the steady increase from 1.914 billion in 2016-17 up to 2 billion in 2018-19. So it's in line with the APP where we said we want to focus also on the agri-parks. So you see that's where the agri-parks line is lying, hence it's increasing. Restitution, you can also see it's growing from 3.1 billion to 3.5 billion. So Treasury is leading our call, although it still is insufficient to fund what we want to do in restitution, but at least they are increasing instead of reducing the budget. And similar with the land reform, you see the increase from 2.7 billion to 3 billion in 2018-2019. So on high level, that is the allocation that we have received through the budget that was presented by the Minister of Finance in February. We've tried now to put it per program percentage allocation. You will see the administration is at 15%, NGMS is 8% for both the NGMS and SPLAM, and 19% is for rural development, with restitution getting 31% and 27% for land reform. you can see where the department is mostly concentrated, which is on the two programs, restitution, I think yesterday and day before last, we have seen restitution coming on strong, that you wanted us to engage with Treasury to get more funding for restitution, which we continue to do every time we bid for budget. But you can also see the largest portion of the allocated funding for the department is concentrated on restitution, followed by land reform, which is for our recapitalization and acquisition of land, more especially strategically located land. We're trying to drive those. I think even politically, that is a thorny issue, where we told that we are slow in land reform programs. So we're getting more allocation from Treasury, and we're making sure that we're using that to advance the objectives, not only of the department, but of the country at large. The economic classification, you would see that it's a Peter didn't put 2015-16 on compensation. Last year we were given 2.1 billion, and this year we are given 2.1 billion. Our budget only increased about 26 million on COE. Now, what that means is it's actually a cut, because your normal increase, inflationary increase, although now inflation has passed the 6% target, you would see that from 2116 to 2142, the increase is about 1%, which does not begin to accommodate what we want to do. So on the other hand, you will see that all the other budgets have increased 6% and more, but the COE has increased by 1%. That basically means you cannot continue to increase your capacity. In fact, you must freeze it, because you will not have money to pay the COE. And that then impacts, because on the other hand, you're given money to deliver service, but on the other hand, you do not have money for the capacity to deliver the services. So, and unfortunately, I think it's across government. We've engaged Treasury. There's just nothing that can be done. We must live within our means. I thought I must just raise that we, in terms of capacity constrained, but in terms of service delivery, we're required to deliver. We even given money to deliver it, but not people to deliver it. Goods and services, I've said that it has increased, and in fact it's increasing 6% per annum. And transfers and subsidies, they have increased quite substantially. When we checked for this coming year compared to 15-16, we have grown 12%. So basically they're saying services must continue. We must just see how do we deliver those. And payments for capital assets, they have remained indifferent, and in fact in 18-19 is going down. And total again is 10.1 billion in 2016-17, and 18-19 10.5 billion and 11 billion, with the increase mostly on goods and services and transfers and subsidies. And just again, you can see 62% will be going towards household, which is where we deliver services. 21% goes to our salaries, and 17% will be going towards goods and services. Total allocation per province, you will see national office gets 22%. I think one might ask why 22%. There are services that are centralized at national office, like your security, your cleaning services, the leases that we have either for accommodation or vehicles. So corporate services are at national, and they cater for the rest of the country. And so you see we've got 22%, and then we go and divide the rest. and of which if we when we go down, you will see that a larger portion of the higher percentage, almost 78%, is at the provinces, with Eastern Cape at 9%, Free State 6% of the budget, Gauteng 5% of the budget, KZN 15%, Limpopo is at 11%, Mpumalanga 11%, Northern Cape 6%, Western Cape 7%, and Northwest 8%. And that is 100% of the budget, 10.124 billion, how we have sliced it per province. And this is just the graphical part of how much went to where. On the households, this is the transfers, the service delivery. National, you can see it's 2% because we don't normally have much of those. Eastern Cape is sitting at 763 million or 12%. This is for all the programs that they deliver, be it rural infrastructure or skills development or restitution. This is how it has been sliced for all the programs that we run. Free State at 411 million or 7%, and Gauteng at 5%, 329, and the largest chunk going to KZN 1.2 billion or 19%, and Limpopo 922 million, 15%. Mpumalanga 907 million, 14%. And Northern Cape 506 million, 8%. And Northwest at 10%. And finally, Western Cape at 8%, 490 million. And in total, what is meant for service delivery, that 62% is 6.2 billion. Compensation of employees. This is the one that I'm saying it has grown 1.2% compared to 2015-16 budget. You will see that administration has got a higher percentage. This is both national and province, followed by restitution. Because of the reopening, we had to get additional capacity. And then you followed by REIT, NGMS, LRD, and LTA. NGMS, we have the programs of bursary program where we bring in, as they qualify, we bring them in to give them the experiential training within the department. Hence, you see their salaries are quite a bit huge. It's mostly because of the this thing that we run where we give them training as soon as they qualify, because it's a scarce skill. We try to build capacity through the bursaries and making sure that we then bring them in to give them the training before they could go to the provinces or wherever they want to go. Goods and services, you can see national office again is high. It's because of those services that we have centralized within the national offices that I've already explained. And then the rest, you can see NGMS is at national offices higher. They would be running the one household, 1 hectare program for us this year, so we had to increase their budget for goods and services. Same with SPLAM, they didn't finish the bylaws, so their funding from national looks a bit higher. Restitution, that is the budget for the National Office for Goods and Services. This year, Treasury has ring-fenced about 150 million towards the research for claims, which then had meant that their goods and services look a bit larger at national office. It's just meant for the research and the valuations and the conveyancing. It has been ring-fenced towards the delivery of those services specifically. And similar with LTA, they have also ring-fenced the monies for the CPAs and the, we normally call it the CTH program that they run, where the CPAs and the labor tenants and the farm dwellers, they can get legal services through the department. So the Treasury has ring-fenced, they have provided money for specifically for that program. Hence, you see that at National Office, we're sitting with more money on the LGA. Those are just the anomalies on the National Office that I thought they would need a bit of explanation, because they do not look at par if you look at the provinces. It's because of the services that are centered within the National Office. The NARISEC, this is the household budget for NARISEC within the department. You can see there's nothing for National Office here. It's because we, the household, there's nothing that we do from National Office for service delivery for NARISEC. So it's only in the provinces. And you can see it's almost balanced throughout the country, with Limpopo receiving a higher allocation for NARISEC. I didn't put them in figures. I hope even the graphs are still acceptable. Now, in rural infrastructure, this is also household. They do the programs for improve food security, production and security, skills development and training, implementation of CRDP, building and construction, and animal and field programs are run by the Rural Infrastructure Development. You can see that the total budget that we have there, you've got your animal and field just above 260 million, looking at the total. I hope I had a pointer. And then followed, we've got building construction, which is just about 360 million. And then you've got implementation of CRDP, just below 150 million. And improved food security and skills development, very low there. And we have distributed it amongst the provinces. Eastern Cape, you can see that on building construction is above, just below 100 million, and KZN similar. Mpumalanga, we have animal and field being the highest allocation that we have given to them. Now that is program three, which if we go a bit back, I think it's on transfers and subsidies. I think I should have given you the figures also. My apology. Rural Enterprise, slide 17. Rural Enterprise and Industrial Development, they do skills development and training. This is towards the development of rural enterprises and the development, industrial development. So they will do skills training centered around the development of enterprises within the rural areas. The economic, sustainable economic support, rural livelihoods and household profiling. And the budget there, in total you've got 270 million for sustainable economic support, and 60 million for rural livelihoods and skills development and training, having about 48 million, and then we distributed it among the provinces. So you will see that Eastern Cape, KZN, and Western Cape, they've got a larger part of the allocation of sustainable economic support. restitution. We've got leave, gratuity, conveyancing, land purchase and development, financial compensation, and recapitalization and development. These are the grants that post-restitution support that they do. The total for budget for restitution is about 3 billion. And land purchase and development has got a bigger allocation of 1.2 billion. Conveyancing is not so much. And then you've got financial compensation following suit, which is just below a billion. And recapitalization and development, just about 400 million. And KZN, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga have got a higher portion of the budget, followed by Northwest and Northern Cape. Eastern Cape has got a whole lot of financial compensation. There are provinces like your Northwest, you will see that their financial compensation is quite low. They do a lot of acquisition of land, and so is Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and KZN. Whereas Western Cape is mostly the financial compensation that they do as opposed to land acquisition. Recapitalization and development, this is the HH portion, which is the recap that we do on communal or what we call the state land, which is just above 300 million in total, and it's mostly equitable throughout the country. There's not really much that we give, because most of the recap and development is done through the PLAS entity. Land tenure, conveyancing, land purchase, and planning grant. This is the land purchase for farm dwellers and labor tenants that we do. Total budget is just 140 million for the land purchase, followed by conveyancing, which is just below 20 million, and the planning grant that we give, which is 85 million. It's mostly concentrated in KZN, Mpumalanga, and Northwest. That's where we have more labor tenants issues, although you still find it in other provinces, but very minimal. The PLAS, which is the proactive land acquisition strategy, we do land acquisition and recap. There you can see the budget is 1.5 billion. Eastern Cape, just 180 million, Free State, 150. Gauteng, the smallest allocation, because there's not much land there that is available. KZN receiving a huge portion of that. Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, Northwest and Western Cape have got each less than 200 million to spend in towards land acquisition and recapitalization through the PLAS account. Thank you.
Dolivo, CFO. Thank you very much for the presentation. I think DG, do you want to say something?
I think that's okay for now. We'll take the question.
Okay. Honorable members, can we talk to the presentation? Honorable Walters, Honorable Magasha, Honorable Mandela, Honorable Matthias, Honorable Filtana, Honorable Robertson, and Honorable Mguni will be the last in the first round.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm just going to start off with where I spoke yesterday. Maybe some of the people weren't present, but in the one presentation I made the point that a lot of the programs we are referring to here actually rely on strong institutions at the very least at a district level. For example, you know, whether the land rights committee is operating, whether the AgriParks management council or boards are working. So I think there's an institutional setting here that I think we need to start working into our presentations for us to really know whether something is succeeding or not. It's a case of putting the strings together to make sure that all the strings are actually working. So for example, with the one household, one hectare program, I would like to know whether that ties in with the AgriParks concept. Whether one hectare farm is probably not going to move beyond subsistence farming in most parts of South Africa unless it's linked up to some form of market, unless it's linked into some type of a agri-pass concept or a value chain or there's some form of ensuring that it's not just an isolated household on a piece of land trying to survive. You know, it needs to go beyond. So I would like to get to hear more about that. It also relates to the pilot projects around the much vaunted strengthening of the relative rights program. The 10 pilot projects there, what is it? What's actually happening with those pilot projects? How are we going to know whether they are successful or not successful? From our perspective, we're not quite sure whether it's a standard share equity scheme or whether it's an entirely new concept that's being tested there. But I would strongly suggest that we get reports in this committee telling us exactly what is happening with those pilot projects. We don't want to hear a year from now, 2 years from now, you know, whether it's been successful or not successful in some kind of a aggregated kind of report that's open to conjecture. I would suggest we need an ongoing report on what's happening with those 10 pilot projects, whether it's profitable, whether it's succeeding, what the problems are. I think it's very crucial for us to understand that. There's also the researcher from the Human Sciences Research Council was here. He referred to the problem of duplication, especially between the various departments. And I think it's something that really a couple of alarm bells went off there, because duplication means money gets wasted. That money could be used better elsewhere. Now, in terms of the training that's being referred to, just use that as an example, that this department does. How does it dovetail with what the Department of Agriculture is doing? Is it two entities doing the same thing? Isn't there complementarity between the two departments in that regard? Isn't there the possibility of saving resources and better use of resources there? And then just a last remark. If the comment was made about the land availability in Gauteng, now generally I think the remark is true there, but there's also in the Gauteng, and I happen to know this because I was in the same field in the Gauteng legislature, there's also in Gauteng projects where land is underutilized. There is, in fact, in very urban areas, the available land that's not being utilized properly, and a number of projects that I think there that can be looked at. So I just think I don't accept that as a rule. I'm just thinking, the name escapes me for the moment, but I know out in the western area parts there, especially in the West Rand area, there's the Randfontein local municipality, for example, owns a farm there that's underutilized. We spoke about it in a previous presentation here about a project in Brunsley, you know, that shows huge potential there, but there's a couple of problems around it that needs to be resolved. So I think we must, the availability of land or lots of land is not necessarily the same as the availability of high value land close to markets. I think that needs to be tested and looked at closely, and maybe complementarity with the Gauteng provincial government there is the issue. So to just to assess that remark, and then I don't think we should just accept that. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. And also thank you for the two reports.
50-50 policy from others. The 2016 SONA reported that 27 proposals. I don't know whether it's the question that was raised by Honorable Mbuni yesterday, maybe related to that. The 2016 SONA reported that 27 proposals have been received from commercial farmers, and 4 are being implemented in the Eastern Cape and the Free State provinces. Are the 4 implemented proposals part of the 10 that was to be piloted in 2015-16 financially? In which areas are the other 6 piloted proposals? So what is the criteria used for leasing the farms to beneficiaries? This is important to ensure that the program benefits the poor, including farm workers who want to farm. The land shall be set among those who work it. We know that. Number 3, in terms of land reform, the performance indicator has a number of farms on policy, on strengthening relative rights in 2016-17 financial year. Medium-term budget is 18. Are you able to reach that performance? Thank you very much.
Thanks, Madam Chair. We also welcome the presentation by the department.
Well, look, for the last 2 days I've received reports from various institutions which Honorable Walters has referred to. The report on the from the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, as well as the Women's Science Research Council, they have reflected some success tales and some challenges and outstanding weaknesses and recommendations on how to overcome those. I will not go into detail of what they have observed and that which came in the form of recommendations. But then from this presentation I would have picked up some few points. Well, on the policy on one hectare, one household, one hectare. Do we have a benchmark? We've got some benchmark of how the department intends to go about that. And can it be presented to us in the form of a policy framework so we can look at it? Because the consideration of this flows directly from the University of the Western Cape Institute on Land and what is called PLUS, on the number of blacks who have vested interest in land ownership. They work some figures out there, and I think it would be good if we can visit the research funding, because though I don't agree with their findings, but this policy direction flows directly from what is suggested by PLUS. I would want to know if there is a benchmark which we can be referred to. That also talks to and applies to the AgriParks model. What is it that we can present as a quantification of the success story? How these AgriParks are doing? Do we have an example of a success story which you can present to us? And a breakdown of beneficiaries in these agri-parks in the 44 districts that are reported here. The model of this, I know there is a paper on the model of the agri-parks, where is the partnership, or what is called the triple P. Partnership between private, public, as well as some emerging farmers. We really need to get to the gist of who are the beneficiaries and how
the percentage or the shareholder percentage is distributed amongst the role players. On land reform, the report says that a number of labor tenants' applications settled without giving us a detail of the nature of applications that have been settled. What is it that has been settled here? Is it the disputes arising from evictions, or is the number of applications settled arising from acquisition of land for labor, farm dwellers and farm workers? Because the Deputy Minister yesterday mentioned something to the extent that government is acquiring land for the resettlement of victims of evictions, those who live on farms. What is the policy framework for the strengthening of relative rights for persons working the land? Well, I see that you are saying this is policy which is one of the policies that have been developed. We want to get a sense of what this policy seeks to achieve and what are these relative rights vis-a-vis already the rights that are contained in the extension of the ESTA. What else will be presented as an alternative legislative and regulatory mechanism from what is proposed here as policy framework for the strengthening of relative rights for persons working the land? Lastly, on the policy of exceptions for pre-1913, I know that the minister has been going through a wide range of consultative forums and all of that, and one of the key cardinal proposal was around exceptions of the pre-1913 Native Land Act and all of that, the claims that can be made beyond 1913. Do you have the data that on the basis of which such claims can be acted upon, and the mechanism through which you would be able to converse the policy alternatives without going into the heart of Section 25 of the Constitution, which would be pleased if that bold statement can be ventured in, getting into the heart of the beast. Section 25 of the Constitution, property rights. So do you have such mechanisms? And if so, can we be favored with such information so that we can look at? Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I also wish to echo my colleagues in welcoming the presentation. I'll be very, very brief, Jay, but perhaps let me somehow link with regard to the issue of evictions. It would be very, very, how could one say, interesting to know the land that has been acquired, or would be plans for the acquisition of land to cater for those who have been evicted, as indicated by the DMA yesterday. It would be good to know where those land parcels are, whether it would be in line with your previous presentation when you indicated the hotspots, because we have been to one of those hotspots and the conditions under which people live are really horrific, you know. So one certainly would would urge the department to really speed up that particular process and indeed try to resettle people on land where they indeed can live as human beings and enjoy the freedoms that everyone have and that so many have died for, Jay. But my main thrust would be around the APPs, the Office of the Auditor General, Eugene in particular, yesterday, in his presentation, have raised concerns with regard to the fact that literally all your indicators are not well defined. And urge you in actual fact to clearly define them. I think it's important. My other concern with regard to is the, well, let me not say concern, why you would, for example, if you look at your 3.3, the whole issue of, let me rather say 5.3, that deals with the land parcels in the outgoing, the past financial year, or the current one, your target has been lowered. Now, one clearly would want to assume, acting DG, that we, if we have achieved a particular target in a particular year, that your next target will probably be more than the one that you have achieved. That you do not go a lower. There must be a reason for that. Even look at program 3.2, you know, the number of agricultural enterprises you are planning, your indicator or your target is 115, whereas 15-16 it was 215. So in actual fact, you drop by 100. It's a huge, huge drop. So the question is why that you were doing it in this particular way. One can go to a number of them where the target has been reduced, and one is just a bit concerned about that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. So let me start off by raising this point of concern here, or question, if I may put it that way. I wonder how much of what we question and suggest goes into a revised APT. I don't know whether we're just going through the motions and the questions that we put will be responded to, but the APT remains as it was. Because I would imagine that the purpose of presenting the APP to us is to get our input and then factor it in what is practical, you know, to be factored in as changes. And the questions that I've got here are intended, you know, for serious consideration so that a revised APP would, if it's possible, you know, could be taken into consideration, you know, and factored in. Okay, my first comment is that I welcome the mix of offerings when it comes to the agri-parks. It's something that I've always, suggested before, that we should not just focus on agriculture. And I'm happy with the statement that indeed the offering is going to be a mix, because not everybody is necessarily for agriculture. There are a number of other industries that can be initiated in the rural areas. I am from the upshire. I know there is that need. The question that I've got is based on the is influenced by the remarks that were made here by the Human Sciences Research Council. And I'm happy that both the DDG and the CFO were present. I'm not sure if the acting DDG was present, but I know those two members of the team were present.
about the trend whereby the budget of the department seems to be going down compared with the national fiscus, to a stage where now where the department is under threat to fail to discharge its constitutional, obligations. And we know just what a political hot potato land restoration is. And my concern is further fueled by the concessions that has been made by the CFO to say that because of the budgetary constraints, therefore the department is unable to add and to run with the full desired complement of staff. And she pointed out that as a result, the department may not be able to discharge all its functions. So there are reasons, to be concerned about this, because I believe that we may fail in any other departments, but there are four departments, if I remember, which are have got a constitutional obligation to deliver. That's land, water, sanitation, health, just forget the fourth one. We may not fall below that. And would like to be on record as members of this committee as having raised our concerns so that when you approach Treasury, you say this is the threshold. We may not fall below, this line. You may want to approach this by realigning the budget to say when it comes to land restitution, the pace is so slow that, and this is the second point I'm coming to, which is why a chair, honorable chair, I would have loved for the Deputy Minister to be still around when I put this one. Last quarter in the NA, I suggested that the department should seriously consider the advisability of lessening on cash offerings when it comes to restitution. I know that Section 25.7 says land restitution or appropriate compensation. But seeing that indeed there is not enough money, would you as a department consider that piece of advice? Because you're running out of money, and that is a fact, year in and year out. Budget is coming down. That's a trend that's been picked up, and that's a trend that you have confirmed yourselves. I'm not saying this is something that can be taken on immediately, but let's go home and look at this possibility, so that we are able to still meet the constitutional, obligation, but we don't run out of cash. Cash should be used to develop the land, rather than to say, for people to say, no, I prefer cash. Because I promise you, if you were to go back to the people who were given cash in 2006, that's 10 years ago, you'll find that they neither have land because they opted for cash, and they don't have that cash either. And so we're not getting anywhere near what the political agenda of the country, should be at. And that is the basis for my suggestion. And that's why I started with that remark as to whether we're just going through the motions or whether you take this so seriously that when you go back, you sit down with your political principals and say, let's look at this suggestion. Towards the end, the concept of 1 hectare, 1 household. Now, again, the Human Sciences Research Council indicated to us that the household in the rural area, the structure and the nature of the buildings of the settlement, so to speak, has changed the type of houses and the size of the family. Now, if we look at an average household in rural areas of about four living souls, now, has any exercise been done by yourselves or on your behalf by any institution to say this has been confirmed to be an economic unit on which a family can live through 12 months? Because maybe we could be saying, we should be saying 1 household, 2 hectares, And is this a one-size-fits-all? In other words, if I'm in Mkanduli or I'm in somewhere in Gwagwa, the climatic conditions are different. Would the concept work right across the country, or is it just a nice phrase to say 1 household, 1 hectare? Crux of the question is, have you done any exercise to show that you can actually, a family? Because you conclude the sentence by saying you want to develop a class of farmers. Have you done an exercise? If you like, you might say My question is the converse of what Honorable Matthias, questioned about the household unit. Have you done an exercise, in other words, to confirm that it is indeed an economic unit on which a family can thrive? On finance. You've centralized so many services, even cleaning, even security. Now, when you look at the academic qualifications of the class of South Africans called Africans, you'll find that they are there in large numbers in the taxi industry where less educational standards are needed, in security and in cleaning. Now, would you consider going back and unbundle this and rather allocate that to the provinces rather than centralize? Because I promise you, if you centralize it as you say you have done, then it means it's only the big boys who will qualify to offer a national service. Now, security is not such a complex thing. And you've got to ask yourselves, what class of goods or assets are we protecting? You're not guarding against bank money or something like that. It's premises and the like. That's need to be secure. If I'm wrong, please bear with me. You know what, where you need securities for, offices and the like. Is there a problem about decentralizing this? Give it to the provinces. So the small guy who has been working for a security company for 10 years, perhaps has been retrenched or has opted to go and try his own business, he's got a chance. He can tender for a provincial or even district municipality level rather than centralize it, because it's only a few people who will be able to tender for a national security or cleaning service. We see this in hospitals, in the SMK, one company, right through, red attack. Why is that so when it's not so complex? Uneducated people can run that. This is finance, decentralizing it. That's why I started off by asking whether you do take what we suggest seriously and rethink your APP through, or whether we're just trying to run through the motions. Lastly, transfers to provinces. KZN people will bear with me. Why so much for KZN, that 1.2 million when there are provinces with less? I'm sure it's not a question of just liking the KZN, but one would love to be favored with reasons why KZN in that particular category has got as much as 1.2, when other provinces are getting far less. I want to thank you, Chair, for the opportunity, and I look forward to concrete responses. Bye.
Thank you very much, Honorable Robertson.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to everybody. A lot of my points have been asked and not quite answered yet, but I'm going to try and stick to issues that I feel are pertinent over and beyond what has been asked. I want to ask the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, how closely do we work with the Department of Agriculture? Because it seems that we lean and rely heavily on their performances as a department, and their failures would ultimately mean our failures and vice versa. If I may make a suggestion, that just at least sitting and having joint committee sittings, I don't know if that does take place, I probably haven't been here long enough, where we can actually hammer out the departments where rural development can hammer out instances where we feel that the Department of Agriculture is failing us and ultimately failing the people out there. As I described yesterday, the incident with the 58 tractors, where we as a department, we really have loved to have seen those tractors operational and everybody benefiting from it, but somehow the Department of Agriculture doesn't see it that way or can't manage it. That's my first question. Secondly, I don't know what slide it was, I think it was slide 7, where we mentioned the labour tenant application process. We are intending to speed up the process in Mpumalanga and in KwaZulu-Natal. I'd like to know how, if they could give us an operational value as to how they intend to speed up that process. report and today's report, we've discussed the job creation, how many jobs we've created, how many jobs we intend to create, which sounds like a process of alchemy, but I think it's very important to us, first of all, just to decipher what jobs is it that people are intending on creating. Are we going to be creating jobs where people are still dependent on the state, whereby they earn salaries through state funding for tractor driving or whatever the case of it is? Or are we actually talking about jobs out there that are formulated or created because of a robust economic values that are created by free market systems? Because there's a very big difference between creating jobs where people are dependent on the state, and ultimately that's where they end, or are we talking about actually improving their lives to such a point where they are benefiting from a free market system and or that environment and actually creating other jobs for themselves as opposed to being dependent on the state? I also, in one of the reports, I think it was yesterday's report, and luckily it was quite early in the morning because in the later afternoon I was almost non-compos mentis. I must apologize for that. But it was mentioned that 1.94 million people had benefited out of restitution. 1.94 million people had benefited. How does that translate into jobs created? Yes, 1.94 million people have benefited through being beneficiaries of this restitution. But how many of those are actual jobs where they're creating? How many have financially benefited from all of this? Directly financially benefited, where they can stand up and say, I've benefited from this in such a way that I can now afford schooling for my child instead of relying on poor rural schooling, for instance. And so on and so forth. I think that's very pertinent here, because ultimately we want to be able to create an environment where people are self-sufficient and not dependent entirely on the state. The last question I have is, I think, a question that has been mentioned, it has been asked. I'd like to ask it again: is how long will this take? This, the finalizing of all the claims. How long is it going to take? There was a figure mentioned of 144 years. One of the honourables has mentioned it before in previous meetings. I'd like to know on the record now today, how long will this process take? Thank you.
Honourable Mngoni.
Thank you so much, Honourable Chair. If I had my usual discussion over tea with my comrade here, Honourable Madela, perhaps my questions would have been fewer, but I've got quite a lot here because I missed that session with Honourable Madela. He usually favours me on Mondays or Tuesdays. Just so Chair, there's much more questions for me to raise. Hope you'll bear. Chair, let's start by. I can incorporate Phil Dunn and perhaps a bit of Honourable Matthias into my tea discussions with Chair, can we start by welcoming? Thank you for the presentations, Department. And just go back a little bit, Chair, and say, perhaps for the proper record, it may as well be that Honourable Phil Tane has a point. It is, now that the Constitution is, it is the executives that the legislature is holding to account. So perhaps we need to concede a point that it would be nice of the three members of the executive to at least at all times have their attendance as much as possible at the initial duty. Would you please kindly convey that, even if you hardly convey it? I wouldn't mind. I would take responsibility, because that's what's laid down in law. We don't want violations all the time. So we hold the executive to account. We don't necessarily hold the administration and, to account. They may be called accounting officers, but it does not, it's referring to something else. It's not referring to accounting to Parliament or any other legislature of the nine legislatures and the NCOP. Just that principle has got to be corrected. I'm not saying I do not accept the apologies forwarded. I'm just, I welcome the presentations. I'll keep on harping the point about formats up until we really fully comply, because it's the guidance, it's the tool, and like I said yesterday, anything that's outside it is tantamount to what auditors would then call disclaimer, because then disclaimer doesn't mean all the money has been abused or what, but it means we are not able to express an opinion, I don't know, something like that. I'm not financial. Can I just start from the vision? I just want to do oversight on the vision first. If you check HOD, now it would have been nice to raise with the executive this. The vision focused on rural communities. Good. But it's quiet on land use management, tenure. There's nothing that talks to land in the vision. You will agree with me from just the rule of thumb. It can't be right. That vision is so quiet about land. Land is space, and anything anyone talks anywhere should always consider space and time as the very, very fundamental dimensions. So the vision is just quiet on space, just quiet on land. Perhaps you can no longer amend, but find a way, acting busy with your principals, to really close that gap. I'm inspired by the fact that visions should always be kept as brief as possible, but they must talk to the point. So the vision is just quiet on land. I do know, Chair, that as you go further down into the documentation, there's more emphasis on land than on rural development. I know. I've checked the finances as well. Chair, can I go to the other issues? There are issues that I think we must agree that Parliament is a platform for discourse, and that let's agree. Points have been raised, I'm making a comment about the free markets. I'm not inspired by anything called free market. And I've not seen it in the NDP nor in any of the other government policy documents. And I do not see this free market system as the panacea that would really sort out our people's problems. They have the historical legacies and everything, and then the solution, the prescription becomes free market, and the free market, and then you shall be free, as the word says. I'm just saying, for purposes of debate, discussion, and national discourse, because if the concepts are raised, and the concepts must be debated by us and by society, then yes, I've got very, very serious worries about free market. And I definitely think that through and through, throughout apartheid, we were told to be under free market, and we saw the worst in terms of the decentralization debate here. I think let's concede it's an ongoing debate for all of us to consider. I concede points by Honorable Sildane. Sometimes over-centralizing just security sets in the local area. In fact, to be practical, DG, one bookseller, Elu Sikisik, in the Eastern Cape, says to me, meets me at a tire thing, I'm changing tires, going to work, to come here to Parliament, and go and try. Then he says, hey, this thing of centralization, you'd find that book sales and distribution is centralized,
but the people who are awarded that still come back to rent my space, my storeroom, and my living services here. So it's an ongoing debate, that one, Chair, and I think the department must consider how, where do you strike a balance between centralization and decentralization, you know. I think it's an ongoing discussion, and I'm just contributing to that same discussion. Chair, the wagon wheel, it's what's popularly known, the self-delivery model at HOD of the, I always say HOD and DG, I always interchange those, please. It's a very famous and historical self-delivery model. Again, I'm inclined quite close to Honorable Sildani. He's having a very happy day here to see me talk like that today. The work on wheel looks into the four main categories: the community, the land, livestock, and cropping. And those of us who come from rural areas would then say fourth. Rural areas in particular are not really about community land, livestock, and cropping. There's a whole lot of conceptual characterization that is falling into the cracks. Out there in rural areas, not just doing livestock and cropping per se, and that's what rural life is all about. So quite a number of things have been left out. But when going through all the documentation here, I had quite a big pile, and even last night and the last week, I did note that, strangely, when you go to one page, which I think we will all agree, there's a nice pie chart diagram there by CFO. Thank you, CFO. You're not called chartered accountant for nothing. But what I learned from your pie chart, rural development gets 19%, and land reform gets 58%. And I'm reminded of HSR season. Rural development gets 19%. Really, department? Can you afford to allocate 19% to rural development in a country that's, by my own estimate, 70-something percent or 78% rural? You then allocate 19% to rural development. I appreciate 58% to land reform, but remember that land reform includes all land reform, including in urban areas. So 19 versus 58, I talk numbers now. It's quite a concern. Service delivery model, how you plan to go forward, is the correct moment to hold you accountable. Rural development cannot be 19%. In the past 2 years, along with some other colleagues, we have chair been concerned that rural development has not been unpacked, and it's this strong area of our work with clear campaigns and whatnot. Now it's 19% funding out of the 100%, and land reform 58%. I'm not complaining there. Chair, just going further down, the 27 versus 44 I visited yesterday, by which the DPME's presentation alluded to how the 27 agri-parts were arrived at. And with your generosity, I'm addressing Chair to you. I'm addressing acting HOD, acting DG, because I have no one else to address. Through your generosity, you wanted to make it 44. In that process, you have forgone, I argue, and open up space for you to reply. You have forgone an important principle of equity in favor of equality. And now, once that happens, we have a problem. Because the most downtrodden would be put on par with the well-off. And when you distribute, you just distribute equally. And that, therefore, I argue in political terms, sustains inequality. But also, if you look at last year's SONA, the latest SONA, or the SONA that talked to the agri-parts, do not go back to my documents now in this specific. It talked about 27.
this generosity to stretch 27 to 44 without stretching the resources. I think the point has been made there. It was made yesterday. There were attempts to respond to it, but I don't want his to judge us for having neglected. Equality and equity is not the same word. It's a profound, profound difference. Share the drought. I go to the next issue. Five provinces and some districts in the six and seven provinces have been declared drought-stricken. Now, the question to ask there directly, in fact, is to request HOD or DG, please provide us, within a week, I know you can provide us while you sit here in this technology, current digital world, provide us with a plan to deal with drought in rural communities. Please provide us with a plan to deal with drought. You can summarize it into a 3-pager. You can be generous enough to give us a 300-pager. We'll accept whichever, you know. But drought, drought, drought. In the situation analysis, you did so well. You captured it. Where's that strategic manager? Thank you so much, sir. You captured drought. You pushed them to capture drought. So where is the plan? Please give us the plan. Please give us the plan. Next, when we go to court now, the court must say Parliament is doing so well. Perhaps, Chair, I talked earlier on about the rural development issue, but somewhere you allude to the institutions like NARISEC, the VG, the CL, and I just want Chair to have a brief on each quickly. The question has been raised by Honorable Robertson. Did we ask that? Yeah. How long is it going to take? I also buy into that estimate of 144 years. Can you confirm or dispute it? Or are the relevant people to be asked? Perhaps you want us to refer to have referred it back to the CRLR Commission? But as a parent department, you should also be able. How long is it going to take us to roll out restitution? How long? What period of time? Chair, I am aware that colonialism took 360-something years before 1994. So 1994 minus 1652 will give you the number of years. But how long is it going to take us to reverse that legacy so far as land dispossession? Chair, we ask to be presented with just a pager on the work of the Valua General, the plan. What is that office? I think some amount of money, I missed the figure now, was set aside. Where is the plan to get that office functioning? What are the key mandates? You can't report HOD, DG, in this year as if it's in the previous years when there was no OVG. Now we have a VG. So the VG must give us a rollout plan. What is that office going to do? And probably, please, with your generosity, if he's not up there in serious commitments, bring the VG at some instances when you interact with committee on oversight, because it's very, very important and strategic and useful office, part of the machinery to, I mean, that valuation general office. NARISEC, thank you, Chair. What is this? HSRC talked on NARISEC nicely. They've got better articulation, they're intellectuals. See, now we're just people's representatives. I like Honorable Tom when she was in the province. She used to say, Singobati Abangitin. We just convey what the people are saying. Okay? So, NARISEC, have you in this financial year 16-17 planned for an accredited thing? That army of 3,000 youths, are you now going to certify them in a manner that they can fit somewhere? If not, you're just working in silos, you're just representing the old system, there's no improvement with all due respect, there's just allocation year in, year out. But qualitatively, are we improving it? Have you interacted with the Department of Higher Education? Is it now whatever they will come out with after that period of time, say 3 years, sometimes it's even 5 years, will they come out with a qualification that SACWA kind of aligned you know, NARISEC. I've coined the concept of rural economic hubs. It's never been, I've never heard it anywhere. Don't you think it can close the gap with your conception where you always look at rural as just agriculture and livestock? Can't there be economic hubs? And to this extent, Chair, I've raised it before. Let me raise it in very specific terms. Higher in Muza Hill Municipality, Elusikisiki, there's a cooperative with 1,500 average membership. They have identified a quarry. That cooperative has not taken off in about 1.5 years now. I've spoken about it before. I remember DG Shabane saying the department is going to look into it. In this financial year, have you planned anything about that co-op? They have the resource, they have the reserves, they have the quarry, they want to start working as a cooperative. So it's not agricultural now, but it's an economic case, entity, also, and so forth. Have you moved closer, or are you, would you be prepared to move closer if Parliament asks like that? And Chair, I may not be so narrow and talk about Lusisi only. If it is manifest anywhere else across the country, I would proudly represent that case as well. If in Limpopo, if in the Northern Cape, there's also such a cooperative, even with just 300 people, that's a useful case in rural areas to delve into. So I've given you specifics. Can you kindly give us the answer? And also, Chair, be lenient to allow a delayed response in writing a week later, 2 weeks later, if the department still needs to find its feet there. Chair, rural space is almost second last, Chair. Rural question. Do we still have in our country towns that cannot be even linked by a tarred road? I know it's transport competence, but you are the champions of the rural question. What happens to the case of Ngabangulu and Flagstaff or Lusikisiki? Honorable Sultan, again, would be very happy with me raising this one. It's an issue definitely we share. I think all other political parties. Still towns joined by a gravel road 22 years down the line. If not, then the tar road from Tabangulu to Lusikisiki or Flagstaff will go via Mount Elif, Oxted, and right round on a 3 hour in what could be 30 minutes if there was just a tar road. I know you don't do roads, but you champions of rural development. Are there similar cases elsewhere? What is the plan? I can see I'm in the third term, third year at the parliament now. I'm finding my feet nicely. Chair, there are macro issues which needed to have been so prioritized. How far is there have been presidential pronouncements? You are the department that's really very strategic coordinator of outcome, what? 17 or whatever. 7, thanks. N2, I call it highway. I hear people call it toll road. I'm very cautious there. N2 highway. How far is that? It's been pronounced in many, many years of pronouncements. N2, people say toll road. I'm very cautious and would like to caution people not to just use that term like that. N2 highway. So much has been said about it. How far is it? Almost a decade now. Linked to it will be the Umzimvubu Dam. How far are we with the Umzimvubu Dam? Maybe a small case to emerge or very linked to that. What's topical at present is the Kolobeni titanium mining, which then gives some fair element of overlap between yourselves and the DMR, Mineral Resources. Have you moved closer and worked with DMR to just look at the merits and demerits of titanium mining in that rural out
far-flung rural area of South Africa. If there's any other prospect elsewhere, I would probably represent it again, I would say. Chair, the IPILRA, during the committee's workshop, you did pick up that we are picking up as a committee the interim protection of land rights. So, what is the status of IPILRA, if you want to categorize this, I mean, to the legislative program? How far are we there? What is your plan? Are you leaving it out and ignoring it in the current financial year? The last one would be a simple one. You can just Google it and find out. What are the hot spots that the department is currently seized with looking at? Hot spots as far as rural development and land reform matters. Hot spots. There's those in the media, there's those in the courts, there's those that would be groundbreaking. Hot spots. Instability at a particular area, Hot spots. And Chair, can I be generous to say the department can also come back later with a response and response plan? Or what will you do about the hotspots, to settle the hotspots? I concede, Chair, today I had just very easy and basic questions, and so that the department really can also have some good soft points. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Can I then give this opportunity first to the department to? I think there were lots of questions. I'll come for the second round to respond to the questions as raised by members.
No, thanks very much. I think indeed there's a lot of questions. We appreciate them, and I'll try and respond to as many as possible together with my colleagues and the others. Like has been said by Honorable Nguni, we will then respond in writing. In terms of the first one, I think the one raised by Honorable Walters, which has been raised over the last day or so as well, on many of our programs and the reliance on the strong institutional arrangements. I think that is correct, that the way in which we are structuring our programs, we are trying to ensure that we do rely on the institutional mechanisms we're putting in place from the ground up. And I think the importance of that is that we want to ensure that even as those institutional mechanisms begin to take place, that they actually help us to bring sustainability in terms of the way in which we're doing development. Development in rural areas cannot be a top-down system where we think that government or state alone is going to be able to ensure sustainability. So the major institutions we're relying on at the moment, the district land reform committees, the district agri-park management councils, the National Agri-Park Advisory Council. As we said yesterday, all of them have been established. And we do understand also that when we talk about functionality, it is a different thing. And there's been a full process now that has been happening over the last few months by the team of land reform to ensure that all of the district land reform committees are capacitated across the country. They've been trained in various areas around leadership, around ethics, around financial issues, just to begin to build that institution a lot more strongly. And most definitely, it is as of the 1st of April that we are going to be using that institution in terms of the way in which we do our land reform projects and programs. So we will continue then with that support. They also have then linked to them very strong administrative support to ensure that it is an institution that can really begin to work. And remember that it's not something that even as we went about establishing them across the country that came overnight. It's been a process of long-term engagement with all partners in the sector of land, because sitting in those institutions are all of the different players as far as land reform goes. The District Agri-Park Management Councils, also pretty new, established as of the latter part of last year. And the same process now of capacitation is underway in terms of this. So I think what we say, Honorable Walters, is that we totally agree with you that a lot of focus has to be placed on that institution. And I take note of the fact that you're saying when we come back in terms of our reporting, that we must also begin to report on the functioning of those institutions in relation to the way in which we work, and we will do that. The National Agri-Park Advisory Council is also in place already, operational at the moment, and includes then, like I indicated the last time I presented, members from across the various sectors with expertise in the different areas of work, and they then are beginning to make sure that their terms of reference can be implemented as they move forward. So we will make sure that we report. I think there's a lot of questions around the 1 hectare, 1 household. So I will try and respond, and I will have my colleagues also here from land reform in terms of helping with that one. On the 1 hectare, 1 household issue, the first question by Honorable Walters, the link to the agri-parks or the value chain. I think most definitely, if we try and only look at this in isolation as one household thinking that 1 hectare of land that they work is going to bring them the substantial economic benefit that we want to see, is not necessarily like that. But we have made sure that, remember, the agri-parks move from production to processing to market access. So when we're talking at the production level, this is one of the initiatives that we want to use to make sure that the land in our country does not lie fallow. Now, if I give you an example of the first project that was launched now in the Eastern Cape, it was a land reform farm previously. It was not being utilized the way it should have been. You remember that in many cases in land reform, a communal property association or whatever legal entity they have chosen would have many households in that. But some households would want to work and others would not. So this now begins to allow us or allow that community to take responsibility individually to begin to work their land. And that's the idea. And in that case, they have now actually, for the first time, taken that responsibility. That land has now been, was plowed, planted, and even harvested. They've managed on their own to get a contract with the local spa and pick and pay to be able to supply the surplus. So even though it's 1 hectare, 1 household, that they will take care of that right that they have, they will still be able to farm as a collective, so that surplus can still go into the market. And the link then with the agri-park would be the same. It will be the surplus then moving into the agri-park. And I think that's the kind of thing that we want. But we really want people to begin to take ownership for that level of work. I think I'll come to the other questions now. In terms of the 10 pilots on the strengthening of relative rights, is it a standard share equity scheme, etc.? I will ask also CFO maybe in terms of the details of those projects that we've already been able to deliver on. Remember that indeed last year we had 10 pilots, and when we came and presented, we said we already have 27 proposals in at the time. Of those 27, my understanding is 17 of them have already been approved within the organization. And then we can also give you details of that and begin to give you updates on the progress. Now, the reason why it is not a typical equity scheme like we may have been doing in the past is because this is coming now from the willingness from the commercial farming sector to partner with their workers on the one hand, but also we ensuring there is capacitation in the way in which people are partnering. It's about real partnership. The previous equity schemes had one flaw in them, in that the people that were part of the equity scheme from the side of the farm workers or the beneficiaries did not even understand the nature and type of business they were going into. They were being done simply to secure just the right of people. This goes beyond that. It's about securing the right, but making sure you deal with the economics. You deal with it as a business entity. So that's the emphasis that is there, and we can begin to provide regular reports as we move forward. What you see in the current report then of the 10 that we will do this year is then, remember, by 2019, we had to do 50. That was what was announced. So each year, those were the numbers we were doing. So we're already above the original 10 that were targeted last year, and the 10 then for this year would be, we would continue with that work and strengthen the work that we're doing in that area. So is it succeeding? Obviously, it's a new initiative that has just started, those ones that we have transferred now, we'll be able to show, and then we will be able to judge the impact as we move forward. And we do have a team that is working on this so that we closely monitor the way in which we're implementing this program. The issue of duplication between departments, does our training link with the Department of Agriculture? I think what we've been doing is we've been working very, very closely with the Department of Agriculture in terms of how we actually implement our projects and our processes across the country. Even if we're implementing the AgriParks program, we're not going to be able to implement that program without working closely with the Department of Agriculture. So we make sure that we almost complement each other in the way and nature of our work. To give you an example, agriculture would do CAF. And CAF also then would have in it an element of training, they would have an element of infrastructure, etc. And then rural development, on the other hand, has recapitalization and development. We have the animal and felt, we have the river valley, and then we do training. So there's a lot of areas in the country that need to be covered. And we make sure then that in doing that work, we are together. The other area of work that agriculture has really been focusing and helping us on is around the issues of market access together with the Department of Trade and Industry. Because they are the ones who must really help us to be able to drive those issues of markets, both locally, domestically, and internationally. So we do that. We have regular meetings, joint meetings between us and the department. We plan together, and later in the year, we are moving towards an Operation Pakisa, which will deal with agriculture, rural development, and land reform issues. So I'm trying to say that we are really trying to coordinate between the two so there is no wasteful expenditure, there is no duplication in terms of the people that we attend to and the work that we do on the ground. Obviously, rural development by nature is cross-cutting and will touch on areas of other departments in the way in which our business operates, and that is our role. So where we start projects, we also then will hand over to relevant departments in those areas. As far as the issue of Gauteng and the fact of land availability in Gauteng, most definitely. I think the issue when we say land availability, remember that it is also about land that we're purchasing, high value, like you were saying, strategically located land that we want to purchase. But we do take note of what you are saying. We are working. Gauteng, as I indicated when I presented on the AgriParks, is one of the provinces that is moving very fast, even in terms of the AgriPark implementation. And they are using the small areas of land that they have, indeed, with tunnel production, and we are working then very closely with them in the development of that, because their focus is on fresh produce, vegetable production, etc. So the smaller land that you refer to, Honorable Walters, we are working with them both in Randfontein, Grantsley, and Western area in those particular areas. But we will also look further into the additional areas that you refer to. I think I've touched on the 50-50 as I was going, but I will also just now hand over to CFO. In terms of land reform and the issue of whether or not we are able to reach the MTSF target within the budget that we have, remember that we did say that when we were talking about the budget, that even now we've reduced necessarily the number of hectares per year, because we also want to focus on the sustainability element, so the recapitalization. So even if you remember Dr. Ngomani's presentation yesterday, she was raising the concern that within the MTSF, we will not be able necessarily to achieve that 2 million target hectare. So that is a bit of a challenge, but we will continue to work then with National Treasury in terms of that one. But it is true that at the current rate of land acquisition, you saw this year, I think they have about 80,000 hectares. We will not meet the MTSF target for land. In terms of the benchmark for the 1 hectare, 1 household, Honorable Matthias, I think what we can do is also make sure that we provide the draft framework kind of document that is there at the moment around the 1 hectare, 1 household. It'll give an indication of the details of how that policy framework is operating at the moment. And we will also give an indication of where in the country we have started to implement this methodology at the moment. Now, I think, again, the question is whether or not we are so fixated on the issue of 1 hectare and whether we've considered the rest of the conditions of an area, most definitely. I mean, in some cases, you're going to have a household having 1.5 hectares or 2 hectares. It's about the principle. And I think that's very important. It's about that principle, so we will make sure that you have that. And I think the principle attached to the whole issue of user rights certificates for those people means that they are able to work those sections of their land. And remember that it is not only applicable then on communal land, it's also applicable on all state land that we acquire. It can be utilized on land we've acquired previously, even under any of the other land reform programs held currently under Communal Property Association. So we will make that that information then available. For the agri-parks, what can we present as success stories? Remember, the agri-park rollout has started towards the latter part of last year in terms of actual implementation. We can provide areas of work, like I did when I made my bigger presentation on agri-parks, of where work has already started, because it has various elements, like I'm saying, production, the actual construction of the hub components where processing is going to be happening versus the market access. So there is not a place yet where we have all three running at the same time, but we'll be able to show you the progression that has happened and the move towards the end of this financial year where we are intending to be. And this is indeed a long-term program even as we move forward. The shareholder percentages in terms of beneficiaries, that model has already been set out in terms of the 70-30 split, and we now can make information available in terms of how that model of 70-30 is actually to happen, and 70 in favor of the smallholder farmers. The labor tenant claims that you see, the target that you see inside the report, that is to talk about the claims that we will settle. So the labor tenant applications that have been made and those that will be settled in the current financial year. So it is not referring to any disputes or whatever. That's not what's being referred to. This is referring to the actual application and the numbers that we will settle in this year, as raised by Honorable McKay. In terms of the policy framework for the strengthening of relative rights versus ESTA, etc., so I'm saying again, we will make sure you get that policy framework as well for the strengthening of relative rights. And you'll see there then that it is where Esther was talking about more just the tenure part of the right, not so much the economic linkages, etc. You'll find that the strengthening of relative rights really tries to bring together that economic linkage between the commercial agricultural aspect as well in terms of the wages written. The policy exceptions were pre-1913. Do we have data? I think, Chair, with your permission, we'll also refer this back to the CLCC, who was here yesterday, and confirm the data that they have in terms of that pre-1913. And we can respond in writing in terms of that and how do we pursue this. We do know the at the moment we've been dealing with those exceptions in terms of pre-1913, and we said yesterday that we also then in terms of the heritage areas already are working with various communities across the country. Honorable Madela, in terms of land that has been acquired to cater for evicted people, can we indicate in terms of that? You'll see even in the APP we talk about land acquired for labor tenants and farm dwellers, and we obviously then can give that information as well for the years that have gone by. DDG Southgate will deal with the issue on the indicators, the issue raised by the AG yesterday. In terms of the issue of why are some of our indicators lower this year than it was last year, if I look at the one on enterprises, the reason that it is lower, you see, last year we had a high target, but what we realized was that you really want to begin to focus on a certain type of enterprises, because we work in close partnership now with the Department of Small Business Development. Remember, they were not necessarily there when we were doing a lot of work in the last year. They're quite new. And we work with Economic Development and DGI. So the type of enterprises we want to focus on this year is really your, I don't want to say bigger type, but the type of enterprises that will support directly the Agri-Park program. And that is why you're finding they are much more substantive enterprises.
enterprises, with others not wanting to do 230 and just be buying each one of them, you know, one item. We want to do a proper process and support a business plan process. But also, the way in which we do cooperative support, we do support in a business plan, and it is a rolling sort of process. So we support them for about 2 to 3 years on each of their business plans. So that's why we have a carry through also there as we move forward, because we have already started last year, and that's why the number of new ones we support this year is lower. It doesn't mean this is the only one. We still have ones that we are carrying through and supporting from last year. And then in terms of Honorable Sikani, how much of what is suggested? I think that's a very good question in terms of how do we actually go back and revise. And I think we take into account whatever you've said. However, you need to understand that in terms of certain substantive changes to the APP, we have to follow the normal process in terms of any revision that may have to happen. But some of the issues you're raising with us, we will be taking them into account. And we do take them into account, even at a policy level, in terms of how it influences the way we work. Okay, the trend that our budget is going down, I think I will also just add that to CFO. But I think, remember that yesterday, the issue, was it yesterday? Now we've been here for so many days. when the HSRC raised the issue of us not being able to discharge our constitutional obligations because our budget is going down or is not sufficient, I think it was largely linked also to restitution. Remember that we were saying that even as we do the research, even as we, if we continue to increase the numbers in terms of research, indeed we will have a budget challenge to be able to complete all of those restitution claims. And the chair had then also suggested that we continue to take up quite serious engagement with National Treasury in terms of that regard. So it's largely the issue of whether or not we'll be able to complete those land claims, and even as we have reopened restitution at the moment. Whether or not, now, I think the issue you raise next as to whether or not we consider the lessening of issues of financial compensation, I will indeed take that up again within the department and within with the minister and the DG when they are back. And I think that we just need to understand also then the framework of the current legislation and the way it is worded and the fact that it does give option to people to choose financial compensation. Minister would always say that we do know that there is a problem. We would prefer people to choose land. And he always says that whenever he gets a submission from KZN, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, they will largely be for land. You will not often find people in those provinces asking for financial compensation. So I think, you know, it's something where our communities need to understand the longer-term benefits of actually accessing the land instead of the financial compensation. However, there is going to be areas where you're not going to be able to restore land, and in those cases, you would have to go with financial compensation. I think that the issue becomes then, how do we make sure our communities are educated with a longer-term planning process, even as they receive financial compensation, that will become a long-term economic benefit rather than a once-off benefit to themselves. I think I've dealt with the issue of the one-hectare, one-household. The CFO will deal with the issues of centralized services when she responds. In terms of KZN and why do they have a higher budget, I think the one thing, remember that even as we look at our budgets across the country, the priority districts of the country, even the poorest districts of the country, 10 of them come from KZN. And that's why you will find they will always, in terms of budget allocations, have to have additional funding because all 10 districts are considered to be in that poorest listing of, if you're looking at the poverty index at the moment. In terms of the questions raised by Honorable Robertson, I think I've answered part of it in terms, sorry. Too many questions. I think I answered part of it when I answered the question on our relationship with agriculture. concept of the labor tenant application process and how do we intend to fast-track this process. There is a detailed process underway in the department at the moment and various teams working on ensuring that this year, as we move forward, we actually have a very clear plan in place, full understanding of the outstanding labor tenant issues that need to be dealt with, so that we can actually implement. So we will have a very clear strategy and plan on taking this matter forward. What jobs do we intend on creating? Okay, I'm not going to go into the debate around the market system, but the types and nature of the jobs we create. On the one hand, most definitely you do not want to create jobs in such a manner that they are continually dependent on the state. But in a developmental type of project, the state has got to be playing a role. So the type and nature of our projects that we implement, all of our infrastructure projects create jobs for all our communities because we ensure that we try and through development databases build up our contractors, but we also then ensure that all labor comes from the communities that we work in. And those cooperatives that we train then become part of the way in which we put out our tenders as well. But on the other hand, as far as enterprise development goes, we in that area create sustainable jobs because we support an enterprise for a particular period in terms of their business plan, but they then begin to have the ability to employ additional people in those enterprises. So it's not about, you know, the way in which we create the enterprise allows them then to be able to bring in other members as they grow. So it's not a continuous support to that enterprise by then. They do create the jobs. Other jobs that we create then would be in terms of our land reform projects, in terms of recapitalization and development, and as the agricultural enterprise on that farm begins to grow, the numbers of jobs will begin to grow as well. Then in terms of how do the people benefited from restitution translate into jobs, I think in terms of that one, I would be amiss to say I know the figures in terms of the numbers of jobs. You have the 1.9 million people that have benefited through restitution. We will check then with restitution and ask them to respond in terms of the economic impact that those households have had in their area. Again, I think in terms of the how long will the land claims process take, I also am not going to respond in terms of saying to you these number of years because there is currently a reopening that has happened of restitution. As we sit right now, there are more claims that have been lodged than we had in the previous lodgement process. So I think there's got to have to be a detailed analysis in order for us to be able to respond. I see these numbers being bandied around everywhere, even in the media and et cetera, around the 140 years, but I think it will be a miss of us to actually say the numbers now. Let us allow the commission then to be able to respond, having taken into account what is there on the table at the moment. However, the CLCC yesterday in her responses did talk to the timelines in terms of the researching of all outstanding claims that we have at the moment and that they intend to complete that within the next financial year. Honorable Nguni, I will take forward to the minister and our political principals the issue of the attendance at this meeting, and I do apologize, Minister is in the Eastern Cape today, and the Deputy Minister as well, so we do apologize, and the DM had an emergency to attend to. In terms of our vision, and that the fact that we are quiet about land issues, I think we'll also take that back within the department, and we will have a discussion. I think that in the way in which we were crafting our vision originally, we want to rather look at a much more impact-orientated vision, you know, of where we wanted to see our rural spaces going to. But we take note that it does not have anything that it says directly to the land issue. In terms of, CFO is going to answer the centralization one. The wagon wheel issue, and the fact that it misses a number of things. I think what we've done is that, yes, we talk about land, livestock, cropping, and community in the wagon wheel. But in unpacking underneath it, we've tried to deal with all the elements of a rural household. So if one looks under community, for example, you'll see that under that we're looking at all issues of socio-economic infrastructure, we're looking at issues of culture, we're looking at issues of education, we're looking at issues of health. Then you, if you go under each one, you'll see that it unpacks it differently at the different levels. And the three phases then attached to it of meeting basic human needs, enterprise development, access to credit, finance, etc. So I think it goes much more deeper than just that first layer, but I will also then look at it again and make sure that we do indicate the depth of the issues that we are looking at as a department under the wagon wheel work. CFO will also again talk to the issues of the budget allocations. The issue of 27 versus 44. Okay, now, originally when we started, and indeed the Yazzie Park should have been in 27, but I think the one thing we need to understand is, and I take note of the issue also of equity versus equality. We took note of that as well. But in coming to the decision to roll to 44, the reason we did that is because agriculture is not space bound. That was the problem you had. It's not, you cannot just do it in one district. Even now, as we do it in municipalities, it will cross over. It will become functional regions in a space. And actually, what we want to try and do is the other way. We want to make sure the richer areas also subsidize the work that we are doing. So you'll find that in all of the districts across the country, in many spaces, the department is not the only, well, in all spaces, we're not the only one contributing to agri-parks in the country. The department has a 2 billion rand budget, but other departments have also put in their money into the space. So for example, DTI, and we've linked now with the special economic zones, they are putting money. Agriculture is putting in money. Department of Environment is putting in money. Department of Water is putting in money. So we are actually the coordinator. And the 2 billion that we have is to facilitate and catalyze the funding of others within those spaces. So even though we've gone into the 44, we will not deprive the original 27 poorest districts of the higher benefit in terms of anything that we are trying to do right now. And in addition to the agri-parks, in those 27, we put a lot of focus on socio-economic infrastructure, including access to roads, water, sanitation, energy, besides the work that we do on agri-parks. And that is why we've actually gone beyond the original 27. So you'll see, even when I presented around the agri-parks model, I did indicate the linkages then that will appear between provinces, even as far as your rural-urban market centers go. So it's not just confined to that, and that's why the difficulty of trying to just say 27 versus others, because even within the rest of the 44, you have many, many poor local municipalities in those places, and we needed to deal with that as rural development. And because we're linking back then to the revitalization of agriculture and the agricultural value chain, the 9-point plan, as announced by the president, required us then to be able to show how we're going to be able to bring the entire country back in terms of agriculture, and agriculture seen as one of the key drivers then of the economy. As far as the drought in the provinces, most definitely, Honorable Nguni, we can give you that information. We have been already working since last year when the drought was announced, together with the Department of Agriculture, and we report weekly at the National Disaster Management Center in terms of the interventions the department is making across the provinces, and we will be able to give those figures and that amount. I think in terms of how long is it going to take, I think it's the same question on restitution, so I'm going to pass that over and we will respond to it in terms of restitution. In terms of the OVG, we take note of that. We will provide a one-pager, well, we'll provide a document that indicates the work of the OVG, the structure of the OVG, etc., and their operations for this financial year. And I will advise DG then that you have requested for the VG to actually join. And it will probably be a good idea because the VG has an important role to play in helping us in terms of land acquisition in the year as we move ahead. NARISEC has always been an accredited program. We have always had an accredited qualification under SAQWA, NQS level. We have NQS levels 2, 3, 4, and in some cases we even have NQS level 5. So every young person who completes NARICEN will come out with a SAQWA accredited certificate. There is no one that completes without a certificate. I think the issue was yesterday also raised as to whether we're reporting on recruitment or whether we're reporting on completion. So you see, under number of skills development opportunities provided, even in the plan of the APP, there's 10,000 there. The NARISEC are included in that, and they have full accredited certification. As of now, in fact, even of the earlier NARISEC that we have, more than 6,000 of them have already been accredited. The big challenge that we had was around the CETA and their capability to move fast in terms of ensuring the certification processes were done. Because once a young person has gone into an FET and they've done their first 6 months, the second challenge we faced was getting them experiential training. Because in order for them to qualify, they have to do their 6 months experiential training. We've managed now through partnerships with various sectors to get them into those experiential training. But then comes the part where CETA has to do the summative assessment part. Together with the, the colleges do the summative assessments, and then they submit that to CETA. Now, if it's a construction CETA, we've had huge backlogs in terms of the number of certifications that are coming out through that process. But the young person will not be left without a certificate. We will ensure that all of them exit with their certificates. That's the process we follow at the moment. In terms of the one you raised of Lusiki Siki, Honorable Nguni, I will follow that up. I am not aware of that co-op, but I will urgently follow up. But just to indicate that, most definitely, we do support non-agricultural co-ops as well, and we provide them with the support in terms of those business plans. So it's not like all our enterprises. You saw even as we were presenting. So most definitely, I will take that one up. The issue of whether or not we have towns that are not linked by proper road network, I think it is most definitely still a challenge. I know Eastern Cape is one of the most serious areas that are hit by this. KwaZulu-Natal, we are also working with them in KwaZulu-Natal, and we're working very closely with the Eastern Cape Provincial Department of Public Works and Roads in prioritizing road infrastructure. We have, as a department, also constructed several roads in the Eastern Cape, and this one I know of the Flagstaff and Tamangulu, and obviously the linkages with Imbizana, and we're working then also with the Department of National Treasury to ensure that through the National Development, the Neighborhood Development Card, we sort out the issue of revitalization of those towns, but then we work with the Department of Transport in sorting out the road network. So we will indeed also follow that again and be able to provide a report. But it is a priority area for us at the moment. In terms of the macro issues on the N2 highway, I think that we participate in the remember that the N2 highway is part of one of the strategic infrastructure projects. We participate in that, so I will be able to get an update for you in terms of where that project is at the moment. There were challenges indeed originally. There were the issues of the community challenges, whatever, and obviously now the latest one, like you are raising, around the mining issues and whatever, but we can most definitely provide that. Minister then, as chair of the PICC, has also been assisting with the work around the N2 highway in the Eastern Cape. So I will get that. And the same with the Umsumbubu Dam. Remember, again, it's driven by a different department under the SIPS, so I will also then get that report in terms of progress. But we are working closely with the Department of Water, and I do know that it is on their plan as well for the current financial year. In terms of IPILRA, we still do work on IPILRA, but I will ask Mr. Zulu maybe if he can just help me with responding in terms of some of the types of work we're still doing there. And the hotspots thing, I think indeed we will then respond in terms of the various hotspots in the country, because of the different programs we are running, the nature and type of hotspots, obviously. We have areas in KwaZulu-Natal where we know there are serious issues that we are dealing with. There are areas in Mpumalanga as well around rights issues, labor tenant issues, areas in the Eastern Cape, and areas even here in Western Cape. So it's the same, it's different in each province, and we can then pick that up and then indicate the response plan that we are putting in place to deal with those critical areas. Can I maybe ask the CFO if you just deal with those issues and then DDG Southgate in terms of any other issues that I've left out, the indicators and the quality, and then Bongi Nkosi in terms of the land reform. Thank you.
Thanks, DDG Oshie. Chairperson, I'll deal with the question concerning indicators. I am a bit concerned that the AG would make such a comment, because before we finalize our ACTs and our strategic plans, they quality control our indicators and our technical indicator descriptors, and they actually sign off on it before we actually adopt the APP and submit it to Parliament. So I will take up the issue with Eugene and see what the problems were with the indicators, and then if we need to, then I'll, we'll work on them together with him. But they do QA our indicators before we actually include it in our APP.
Thank you. The question on the 19% of the budget allocation to rural development, what we need to take cognizance of is all the work of the department is concentrated in the rural areas. So it's not only the budget of Program 3 that is meant for rural areas. If you look at the work that restitution does, it's still there in the rural areas. Look at land reform, the land acquisition, the recapitalization, it's still there. Look at LTA. So that 19% is only on the infrastructure and the rural enterprise development only. But all the other budgets that we have still go to the rural areas. So even the 81% you're looking at restitution, portion of that is at rural areas. The 27% on land reform, portion of that is in rural areas. The labor tenants are mainly in the rural areas. So it's not only the 19%. That is just a program within the Department of Rural Development. I hope that responds to the question on KZN. The DDG has already responded. The trend on the budget seems to be going down. Not necessarily. I mean, the budget has gone up almost 1 billion compared to the 9.1 billion that we had in 2015-16. We're now at 10.1 billion, which is a billion rand increase. So the issue is, where is the cut? The cut which is on COE, meaning that now we need to rearrange ourselves and look at skills issues and capacity, not necessarily to say we will not be able to deliver. We are rearranging the programs to make sure that we still are able to deliver, because the cut on the COE is across the board, it's the whole government. So it's not only us. It just says we need to now rearrange so that we are still able to deliver.
So, can I just clarify my question? About the budget cut context.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your response. The context in which I remarked about the budget cut was with regard to the national fiscus, not that the budget per se has come down, but the trend, if you remember what Human Resource Council, Research Council said, they said the national trend is that the budget of the department has come down. So you don't just compare last year with this year, but look at the total vis-a-vis the national fiscus. That's the context of my question. Thank you.
Can I request that we would engage Treasury, because the fiscal allocation is within Treasury. I thought the as you were talking in essence to this department, which is that's why I was answering, to say if you look at the trend from if you even go back to as far back as 2009, you'll see that the budget for rural development has been increasing steadily. It's only last year that during the MT, the adjustment estimates that they took a portion of our budget, but otherwise the budget has been increasing. As a total of the national budget, that's the issue that we can engage National Treasury. Centralization, we've got contracts that are currently running. Most definitely when they expire we would consider. We centralize that for management purposes, but nothing that says we cannot then still, even though it's centralized, issue a tender for Eastern Cape in Eastern Cape, although the funds will be centralized within finance at national, but then have this service provider appointed at the provincial level. Most definitely when the contracts expire, we'll consider that as a way forward. The issue on the SRR, the strengthening of relative rights, we are delivering this in conjunction or in partnership with the National Empowerment Fund, because they have the capacity, they have the skills and ability. This is now not solely an equity scheme, but a partnership between the owners of the land and the workers of the land. And we have now brought in NEF to do the post acquisition management of this thing, that they would have them representing us as the governance body of the farms, so that they can take into account or manage our interests together with the interests of the laborers at the farm for a period of, I think we said, between 5 and 10 years after we've acquired. They must remain there to make sure that the plans are implemented and there is monitoring and evaluation of whatever is happening at the farm. I would propose that we bring a full report on SRR later, because it is there. We report on this on a weekly basis to the minister on the progress on the implementation of the 50-50. So better we bring that report here, where you can see the farms and what is happening at these farms, what is the status of the implementation of this program. That way I was supposed to answer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any follow-up questions, honorable members, honorable workers?
Chair, I'm really interested to get into a debate with the member Nguni about the free market and whether it was in fact the problem that, in the past, but that's a different, I mean, that's something we'll do over coffee. I just want to confirm, so are we agreed as a committee, and is it agreed that we can get regular progress reports on these 10 pilot programs and around the relative rights, and then also what I also heard here is around the district committees, land reform district committees and the agri parks, that we can somehow shape our reports, that we can track the viability and the sustainability of those. I think that would be a major step forward. Thanks.
The 10 pilot sites that Honorable Walters is talking about, I see even before coffee we're quite close on some issues. But the issue, Chair, is just to find out if, because they were pilot, now in the APP there's a talk of 17 of the 27, you know. So
have we moved beyond piloting to implementing on the 50-50 policy? And if so, as it ought to be the case, then, what are the lessons and outcomes from the pilot that we drew, and basically, which would then have led to what would then become a revised policy? It's just to make that follow-up. It's quite close to what Honorable Walters is checking to. I'm following up, Chair, on the TPME 2744 is just a case study, but I'm looking at the underlying principles there. TPME talks about how the 27 was arrived at, 27. Can you please share with us the diagnostic tool for determination of poverty indices? Because if 10 happened to be in KZN, so be it, if that's objective. Well and good. 10 out of 10 districts in KZN are all poverty stricken. Then, so be it. Well and good for us to act on that and not shy away from it. Unless if the diagnostic tool is subjective and flawed, then in which case we need to be presented with the diagnostic tool, or perhaps share the whole report. We can even, if it's too complex, we can refer it to people and even our own technical support to analyze. Because the responses that keep coming, Chair, don't seem to heed the danger of flouting equity with equality. It's very, very dangerous. It's very dangerous from where I sit. And we can all cease to exist and just have functionaries fitting to divide everything by the number of provinces and by number of municipalities. So the diagnostic tool is going to be informative. Dr. Ngomani, yesterday or the other day, had spoken as if the 27 was scientifically arrived at. I do take acting DG, I do take your point that there are then further add-ons by other engaged departments on the agri-parks. But I'm a strong convert or believer in the saying that if you see injustice anyway, then you should act on it. So it can't be that we just do as we please about poverty indices. In fact, there's a word I've not pronounced here, which in future engagements here I will pronounce. How do we debantustanize those areas like Lebua, Venda, Bokutazwana, Bokuta, what's name? Bokuta, Transkei, Siskei, you know, Deep Zululand, all those that were homelands. We seem to treat them to be on par with what might have not been as disadvantaged. And it's about time that we dig very deep. It's an era of radical economic transformation. The NARISEC is the first time I pick up this response. And I don't know why HSRC, I'm the very learned than myself, I'm just in Batabandu, and people are saying this and I take it up. Why they didn't pick it up that NARISEC, why did HSRC not pick it up like me? That the qualifications there are SAQA aligned and therefore perhaps just to follow it up, Chair. Now, do you guarantee us, Department, that youths coming out of NARISEC programs can fit into degree programs and into right through to PhD, you know? Can you give us some case studies and say, yes, then NARISEC graduate and he's now doing his MBA at wherever. Is it true? Is it really, really true? Is it really?
with respect. We don't want to produce with respect dwarfs, people who cannot go further, who will be at a certain level, and that's all. And the history will judge us strongly. I'm just requesting an 8 to 10 pager on the macro projects like the Zimvubu, the highway, be it information that will be obtained from the PICC or from wherever. You are rough development, you should have interest. Because if those macro projects actually unfold with clear project budgets and everything, this country's rural landscape will change for far, far better. You know? The hotspots here, I had requested that we also provided with a written response. Please don't leave out any. Hotspot is a hotspot by any definition, both legal, social strife, and so forth. And some topical in the media, there are even some cases where minister has been asked, sure, you could know it better and actually it better. A case in Mpumalanga, what our minister must do at the court. There's a case in Northwest. Please, we want to hear about those cases so that committee can conduct oversight and integrate into our program those cases. So we want to hear each case, the status quo, how far you are with it. We appreciate you the responses, but I do think that they are loose ends. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. Just a few questions from my side. Can you indicate to us whether do you have any accruals or commitments? If there are any, how much of that? On your report, you have indicated that you have got 1,496 RECAP projects that were started when the RECAP was initiated. Do you mean that all these 1,496 have exited the system because it was a 5-year program? After 5 years, you have to exit and continue assisting other farmers. Just a highlight on the issue of the new, whether do we have the new recruits in this financial year for the geomatics? If there's any, how many of them? I just want to comment on the issue of the bills. You have mentioned the bills and policies that you are intending to submit, but you're very much discouraged because in 15-16 you submitted the bills and policies to be submitted to, especially bills to be submitted to the committee, but up to date you have got only one. That one was submitted late, not according to your plan, the ESTA amendment, which is a very serious concern. I don't know whether it's a serious violation of your plan or what. Then, you know, the increase, I'm not a financial guru, but I've realized that there's an increase with regards to the transfers to ITP. What informs the increase, CFO? Because I think they were at 18 million. There was an increase to 19 million. Because really, ITP doesn't need any additional money. Here we're talking about the budget. ITP doesn't need any additional money. Those people have got money. I'm saying they've got money because even at the end of the financial year, they've got surplus. How do you add, keep on adding to a person who at the end of the financial year has got a surplus? Why can't we take the money from ITP, the one that we've added, and just take that money to restitution? Because that is where we've got the challenge. But can you take the call to everything? Or Newcastle? Because those people, they have enough coal. Why this increase in ICP? The impact on the reduction of the compensation of employees. Because according to the DPME briefing, that you delayed to submit the full climate survey report,
That is why there was that reduction, because the post that you're supposed to fill, you failed to submit them, to fill them on time, which led to this reduction. The impact of this reduction. I was just checking here about this. You know, I'm the person who, when you give me a document like this, we're not meeting here for the first time. We started to meet in 2014, 15. We've been talking one and the same thing about our 5-year program. So when you give me a document, I go back and compare. What is it that you've said in 2014, 15? What is it that you have said in 15, 16? What is it that you are saying now? I was just looking, I don't know whether I'm using the spectacles, the issue of the secondary co-ops and the mega cooperative. Iphelele kuphi? Then, I think the issue of the skills development has been asked by members, but you have changed your targets by 20%. When looking at your targets for 2015-2016, others that have been mentioned in 2015-16, they are no more appearing in 2016-2017. But you didn't give us the reasons that you have changed this because of this reason, you have changed this target because of this reason. But what is appearing on the Auditor General report is that you have said you are going to move the targets from the APP to the implementation plan. Because if the target is not in the APP, how do you implement, how do you involve that target? How do you put that target on the implementation plan? Because the implementation plan, you just simplifying the annual performance plan. This is what you have said you are going to do, how we're going to do it, when we're going to do it, and how much are we going to do it. According to my understanding, that is the implementation plan. Maybe just tell us what informs you to cancel other targets and retain others. So that, and also just to caution, when you change some of the things, the committee must be aware of that. Because this document is a document that will hold you accountable based on the information that you have provided us. If there are any changes here, then you come the next day that, no, we didn't do that, we realize that you have made a mistake. Ujelubani. Because you know, still have that document. Over to you, Acting.
I think that on the follow-up questions, the first one, most definitely we're confirming that we will bring those reports that we've set, all right? The one on strengthening of relative rights, we can constantly report, and we'll also then try and make sure when we report on the IP parts, we show the alignments with the institutions as well as in terms of our other work. In terms of Honorable Nguni and the questions raised on the lessons and outcomes from the pilots, and is that why we're moving forward? Remember that originally it was said we will do 50 pilot projects by 2019. Now, indeed, what we are doing is, as we are implementing and learning lessons from the first phase, we are then using those lessons in improving, like the CFO was explaining, the way in which we are doing the strengthening of relative rights going forward. So we are implementing and putting in those lessons. And when we give that full report on the strengthening of relative rights, we will then indicate those as well. I think Honorable Nguni I'm responding to his question. I don't know if I'll come back to it when he's in. Okay. The one that he raised around the 27, and how did we arrive at 44 instead of the 27. Remember the 27 was done to a process, not of the department, but really when the country was announcing that there's these 27 priority districts in the country. And the diagnostic tool was the poverty index, the poverty, but I'll give you the thing. The whole poverty index that was used in terms of determining the poorest areas of the country, and that's when the 27 came up. But I'm saying that same tool obviously can be used in all areas of the country, even within the 44, to show which are the poorest places within the 44. And we will be able to give you that tool that was used. But like I'm saying, it's not necessarily then a diagnostic tool that allowed us to move from 27 to 44. When Dr. Romani was speaking yesterday, she was speaking around the original 27 priority districts that were based on that poverty tool. But we've indicated that in moving to the 44, we still take account of the special needs requirement of the 27. But in terms of the 9-point plan and the revitalization of the entire economy of the country, we've had to find a way to ensure that we touching all of the areas. But that does not lessen what we are doing in the 27. But we will submit that the original tool that she referred to that was used for the 27 as well, and the rationale then for us moving into the 44. In terms of NARISEC, I actually picked that up when Jacobs was presenting the other day from HSRC, and I will have a discussion with them, because we've always from day one said the NARISEC program, the difference in the program from other youth programs that may have been run is that it includes an accredited skills program in it. Now, I was explaining, it's entry level, some of them are two. Remember, it was a skills program, so they're not all at degree level. So it's FET-linked kind of skills programs. And all of the FETs in the country are our partners at the moment. That's where the young people go to study. So we have an agreement even with the Department of Higher Education and Training in terms of that engagement that we have with the FETs. So they are entry levels 2, 3, 4. In some cases now, as part of the exit strategy, some of the NARISEC are choosing to continue, and they then are moving into NQF level 5. And they want to go then further into artisan training. It also depends on the type of area of skill that they want to engage in. So those are things that are open to the youth. But we can submit the details of the types of things that they've been studying. Well, obviously, we don't have a PhD yet in the NARISEC program. But our intention is that we give them that ability to be able to move. And remember, the idea here was even as we're giving them skills, we're also talking about the employability of them as they move forward. The report on the two, most definitely, Honorable Nguni, I've taken note of that, and I will present that. I will provide those reports, both on Mzimbubu and on the N2 highway project. I think I'm going to ask, and then on the hotspot, we'll take note of what you're raising and the ones around the areas where there are critical cases, etc., as I've indicated. CFO will deal with the ones on the accruals, the commitments. I will ask CD Bonginkosi Zulu to deal with the issues of the recap projects. The new recruits for geomatics, DDG Southgate, as well as in terms of the bills and policies. And the process that we're going to follow now. As of yesterday, there was also one additional one that went through in terms of cabinet committee for the Communal Property Association amendment one. So that did go through yesterday. CFO will deal with the increase in ITB and the impact of the reduction on COE. I think, Chair, the question you raised around the ones that now suddenly are not appearing, the specific one I'll talk to around the secondary co-ops and mega co-ops. I think the way in which, when you see enterprises, etc., supported in our document, it still includes the secondary co-ops, and I think we'll have to just provide the breakdown of that to you. But DDG Southgate will indicate why we rationalized in terms of some of the targeting. The mega co-op one, remember, at the end of the last financial year, we did indicate our challenge that we were facing still around the mega co-op one. But What has happened now is that we are still progressing in terms of the establishment of the mega co-op. The secondary co-ops are now in place, even on the one of the women. They've registered now their secondary co-ops. We are constrained a little bit by the act in terms of cooperatives that every layer must be in place before a tertiary co-op could be established. So the secondary co-op has been established now. They've also now registered a CFI, a financial institution, a cooperative financial institution for the rural women crafters across the country, and they're now moving into that mega co-op. So we still have it. It's just not in. I acknowledge that it's not in that in the APP at the moment, but it is still there, and we're still moving towards it. We have had challenges around that. There were two: the Narisek mega co-op, and then the one for the rural women, and both of them are still moving ahead as we had planned. But indeed, we've now partnered with the Cooperative Bank Development Agency within National Treasury, and they are helping us to drive those processes. So we'll still can report on those. DDG Southgate will respond to the other ones around the targeting and the changes in the targeting. Thanks, Jay.
Honourable Chair and the members, on the recap, may I request that we the chairperson on the committee allows us to prepare a report on the recap farms that have now entered their 50th, or they are out of the program of the total farms that we have recapitalized. We will provide that report, detailed report, so that will give you more information on it. And there are only two, if the chairperson can allow me, two questions that were left out, one on IPIRA, the Interim Protection of Informal Land Rights Act. As the Honourable Member Mbunu will remember, that act is normally every year is extended. The extension notice was published. The only action that is remaining is for it to be presented in Parliament. So I'll get more details in terms of the time frames for that. The last one, which was omitted, is the issue of the criteria for leasing of state farms, especially the farms that we acquire in terms of the proactive land acquisition. That is plus, we have developed a policy on the selection of suitable candidates for allocation of land by the state. So that policy exists. It details how the process needs to unfold for persons who want to lease land from the state. So it's a detailed policy. We can also provide that information to the committee. Thank you.
Chairperson, with regard to the three issues, the matter regarding legislation and our legislative program, it does impact on our performance, but at the moment there comes a point in the legislative process where things are out of our control. The moment it goes through a parliamentary process and into a cabinet process, then we're subject to two different timelines, and whether things come out of that process, we can implement it and the legislation gets enacted. But it does impact sometimes on our performance. It impacts on the performance of the Chief Director of Legal Services as well. With regard to impact on reduction of our COE budget, I think both the CFO and myself are concerned. The department has put in place a resource allocation committee to look at how we proceed with the filling of vacancies in the department now, where the DPE refers to us not to make an available report or the cut in the CSE because we haven't filled vacancies. Partly correct, but the cuts in the COE budget is government-wide. All government departments at the provincial level and national level, they have had their COE budgets cut because, as the circular indicated from National Treasury, the state of the South African economy. We have put together we've now in the final stages of reviewing our organizational structure. We're tabling the final draft on Monday, and we've also done a skills audit so that we can have a very good picture of the qualifications and skills of our employees and see whether we can we optimally utilize them in the organization. Regarding the ATP and changes and movement in targets, I think DDG also has spoken about the one about the megacarb. The other two that have been changed or have been dropped are the ones regarding the IT and the filling of vacancies. And they haven't gone into implementation plans, they've gone into the components operational plans, or what we call business plans. So in IT, the IT component has their own business plan for the year, and it's been put in there, and it gets tracked. There was a concern mentioned that our ATP has got too many indicators. That was raised both by DDNE and by the Auditor General to us. So in terms of rationalizing that, we looked at the operational issues which could come up, and then to track what is known as our line function issues in the line branches, such as geomancy, such as rural development, land reform, and restitution. And those have all been kept intact. Regarding the National Geomatics students, those persons are still, the final lot are still in the system and busy learning. But what we've had to do, and as part of the cut in our COE budget, is the previous contracts that were had is that we would absorb these persons once they were qualified. At the moment, we don't have money to absorb and create additional employees in the organization. National Treasury has capped our staff numbers at the current level. And so if you want to create any new posts, you have to actually indicate which posts you're sacrificing and abolishing before you can create. So for example, we have 5,974 posts. That's our given number. If we want to create a new post and I want a new PA in my office, I have to indicate which post I'm actually abolishing to create them in order to cap staffing numbers. So we've had to review the contract we have with our bursary holders. We've also had to look at the internship programs that we run so that we don't create any unnecessary expectations among people that we bring in on learnerships and internships in the organization. I think I've dealt with all the questions. Siva?
Perhaps just to add on the COE issue, the letter that was released by the National Treasury from the Minister was that across the board they're going to take 25 billion out of the budget allocated for the whole country from COE. So it's not an issue of the department not submitting any report. It's the budget guidelines of the National Treasury. And it's across the board. I mean, when we were submitting the final ENE, I actually...
The DPME. I think this was based before that decision was taken, that we have posts that we're supposed to fill. You fail to fill those posts because you delayed this. There was no report, that climate survey report. Not after that decision has been taken. We are aware of that one, that you're saying, that's across the board. But you've been given money which you failed to spend. That is why there was also a reduction during the adjustment.
Okay. The question on the ITB, I'm not able to answer. Thank you.
Colleagues, I think we've arrived to... Honorable Mattel, do you want to say something?
I just wish to request also a report presented to this committee on a lease deadline, the length of the lease, to who it's leased, etc. You know, what are the obligations. Also, on the NERSEC, if we can get a sense of how many of the learners have graduated. I mean, there was at one stage a report from DDG Southgate around the problems from the CITAS in terms of the certification. I remember there was a number of them, that were not, that could not graduate because of that. I think it had to do with the whole issue of moderation and perhaps also the experiential learning. So we need to have a report also around that, so that we can satisfy ourselves that those learners have gone through the process. And especially, I appeal that they also indicate what happened when the learner has graduated. What happened to that learner? What has been the exit strategy? Is that learner at home now? They have acquired more skills to be unemployed, or has that learner been absorbed somewhere else? I think that will also give us a sense of what happened there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Let me just indicate that thank you very much, Acting DG, for the presentation. Do you want to say something?
Maybe before you conclude, I think on the issue of the ITB, we'll also look into the reasons in terms of that additional transfer, and then we can indicate that.
It was just a caution that when you allocate budget, you must just consider whether is there any need for additional funding or not. You just don't add money when it is not necessary to do that. But there should be a reason. You can't buy me more shoes while I've got 50 pairs of shoes, of new shoes that I didn't wear.
Definitely, you take note.
Thank you very much, Acting DG, and also the CFO, Mr. Southgate, and the team. We hope that after this we're going to get the implementation or operational plan, because most of the questions that we're asking here is because you don't have the operational plan, which is the breakdown of what is it that you will do, at what time, at what cost, so that when we oversight you, when you're saying there will be infrastructural projects in rural areas, you must be specific in which area, what type of a project, at what cost, who will be doing that. We'll be awaiting that plan, and also the reports on the pilot, on this 50-50 pilot. I have noted, honorable members, that we need to have joint meetings with other departments, because while we're engaging with rural development, it was clear that some of the issues are cross-cutting issues. We need to have a meeting with the Department of Transport, especially on the issue of roads, Department of Water, Department of Agriculture, you know, and other departments on the issue of enterprise development, so that at the end of the day we move with the same understanding and we assist the department as it is the coordinator of rural development. Then the report on drought intervention, especially in rural areas, report on value general, exceptional policy progress report. You know that there was Kimberley 1. Don't know whether Kimberley 2 has taken place. Kimberley 3 will be coming, or Kimberley 4. But if we can get that report, the status report, although you have mentioned in your plan that it will be finalized in 17-18 financial year, but we need to get the progress. Where are you now? Then the policy on animal and health management, OVG, the structure, the responsibilities, the budget, what is it that the budget is going to assist that office with? Get the progress on agri-parks, on micro-projects, progress on the integrated funding model that you're busy with the Department of Agriculture, the report on Umzimvubu and N2 Highway, the report on the recap, those who have exited, and also those who will be funded in this current financial year, and also the status of those who were funded in the previous year, because it's a five-year program. The policy on PLUS, and also the NARISEC report. But we are not saying bring all these reports at once. But
still going to sit down with the support staff and start to lose the report, so that when you submit the report, that report is being discussed, then we just park it aside, we deal with the second report. But Pumla will direct you when do we need some of those reports. We'll just plan which report should be submitted when, so that when you submit the report, we engage you on the report that you have submitted. Thank you very much, honorable members, our support staff, our guests, and also the department. I think it was a nice meeting. We're supposed to be out of here at 5 o'clock. We felt sorry for you. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.